to Reveal is back, and this time it's better than ever. We're giving away over 100,000 prizes, including three new Fiat 500 cars. Buy any slice and peel a tab for your chance to win. Ciao, I'm Dominic Primucci, inviting you to taste the difference.
439-444-PIZZA-NOVA.
This is Primetime Sports on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
All right, the NHL season finally begins tonight in Toronto. That means the Senators will take on the Maple Leafs. Sportsnet Ontario. Puck drop will be just after 7 o'clock. Hockey Central tonight at 6:30. Gord Stellick, host of our Leafs Nation pre- and post-game on Sportsnet 590. The Fan will join us in studio. You can hear Leafs Nation tonight immediately following the conclusion of the Rays A's American League wild card game. And Richard Deitch, as we kind of suspected, still don't know the identity of the Leafs captain. I'm hoping that Kyle Dubas channels his inner, I don't know, Vince McMahon or whatever, and has John Tavares skate out in the ice tonight with the C in his jersey, and it'll be great. We'll be joined, by the way, at 4:30 by Wendell Clark, the man who has kind of come to define what it means to wear the C in this city, I suppose, along with Doug Gilmore. As if that's not enough, Mike Babcock took the opportunity today to decide to make Jason Spezza a healthy scratch against the team that drafted him.
What is his issue with Nick Spezza?
Well, I mean, the excuse was that he needs, you know, this will give him a little more time to get acclimated to the penalty kill. And he will play on Friday. Jason Spezza has played about a billion years in the league. So unless the Leafs are trying to split the atom and the penalty kill, I'm not entirely certain that I'm buying that.
I feel like
it sounds to me like another just Mike Babcock needs to do something to just show that he's the head coach.
Well, I'm just going to say two things. One, I always feel like Mike Babcock needs a guy to sort of take his sort of shot on for whatever reason. He uses his coaching example. It's kind of BS. The second thing is, I know John Tavares is not this type of guy, but you know, I like the fact, Blair, that you cited Vince McMahon. I mean, how great would it be if the guy sort of skated out there in not a jersey or something like that, and he just like rips the shirt open? And
yeah, well, he won't do that.
He's just going to skate out and just like a hockey player, do the wave or whatever. Yeah. Like
I think it's kind of, I mean, I like the idea. I mean, it annoys me.
If it was Vegas, they would do something like that.
Well, yeah, well, Vegas is tacky anyhow. That's the Vegas Golden Knights. Nobody cares about them. You're talking about a franchise that's loaded with
you don't like that. You don't like the pregame show for the Vegas Golden Knights?
No, it's stupid.
Oh, I love that stuff. My God.
Dumb. It's wholesale jackassery.
Wow.
Anyhow, I as much as it disturbs me to have actually mentioned Vince McMahon,
I know.
And I looked towards you to make sure that that was the name of the person.
It was, yeah. Okay. And I'm proud of you for putting Renee Young on. I know you didn't really want to, but that was nice of you to do. I appreciated that.
No, she brought coffee. She brought Starbucks. I'll put anybody on that brings me coffee.
Really? All right. I'm gonna get my WWE contacts then to bring you coffee.
Not them. No. But she's one of us. She's smart. She's
Canadian.
One of us.
Torontonian. That's very true.
But anyhow, aside.
I know.
I like the idea. You know, it's a hell of a lot better than holding a news conference at Real Sports or something like that and then having the captains on stage, which is what happened.
Yeah, I agree.
When Brian Burke was there. That wasn't just that bad. It wasn't that was a horrible idea, but it's, you know, it's been done once. That's enough. But I also think that this, having the captain, and again, we don't know. They may hold, you know what, they could hold a media conference at 6.
I think that's what
15.
They're going to do. I was just going to ask you that. I feel like traditionally, the NHL will do, you know, like when a player comes back to a team after he's traded, like James Van Riemsdyk, perfect example. 6:15, they'll give 15 minutes to the media.
The only thing is,
do you think that would happen tonight? Like at 6 o'clock, they'll just do a quick, here's our captain, Tavares makes a quick stab.
That's entirely possible.
Off.
At that point, if I'm the Leafs, I'm saying to hell with it, and I'm going to run them out and surprise everybody. And
that's,
I think
cool,
also
though. That's theater.
Well, I think also doing that, you send a message to your fans. You know, you're telling the fans at the same time as the media.
I like that.
Who your
I like the theater. Dude, I like the theater of that. I think that would be cool.
It's theater necessarily, but
it's going to It's going to leak anyway.
Drama.
You know, some reporter.
It's not going to leak.
If he puts the C on and is coming out, there's going to be somebody who's going to spot him in the. On the sort of the catacombs of Scotiabank.
No, they'll just leave him in the dressing room, kill all the lights, and bring him out.
Maybe. Okay. That'd be theater, though.
Oh, anyhow.
All right. Anyway. I like it. I like your thinking there. I would do that.
But you're right. They'll probably hold a news conference.
No, I'm with you now. I think actually they're going to do a more dramatic kind of, sort of unveil.
Yeah. I just don't know if I'd want my captain's first job an hour and 10 minutes before the game to be answering questions about
the captaincy.
About the captaincy.
Yeah, because he's going to get asked about
it. And at some point,
Austin.
Somebody's going to say, yeah, exactly.
I'm with you. That's why I now think about it a little bit more, I don't think we're going to see a press conference. I think we're just going to see the reveal on ice, which I think would be kind of a cool moment.
I think, and I'm sure the players know. And
Great moment for Sportsnet, though, right? It's good TV.
That's very good TV. That's very good TV. But anyhow, getting back to Jason Spezza. So yeah, clearly Mike Babcock has found the guy he can poke. I guess he becomes Garrett Sparks
in some ways. He's a vet with a great pedigree. It kind of annoys me if Babcock makes him his I don't even know how you'd sort of phrase it. I don't want to say fall guy, but you know, his
seems an odd choice for a whipping boy.
Yeah, whipping boy, or however you want to phrase it. Yeah.
And you know, to me, it's classic. It's a classic example of overcoaching, of overthinking things. But you know, this is a veteran who's come home ostensibly to take one last shot at winning the Stanley Cup. I can't imagine this guy needs motivation. The Leafs. I mean, we're talking hockey penalty kill. Like we're not talking. You know, we're not talking medical science here. We're talking a penalty kill. I'm sure Jason Spezza is smart enough to figure out where the hell he's supposed to go on the ice on the penalty kill.
Of course.
And if he isn't, then I really don't think that another day or 2 days of practice is going to get him there.
Again, I like the move as a fourth line player, and I'm very surprised he's not in the starting lineup tonight.
Anyhow, there you go. Leafs and Senators tonight. We'll have Canucks and Oilers 10 o'clock on Sportsnet Ontario, Sportsnet 360, our doubleheader, and Corey Hirsch, Canucks NHL analyst on Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver, will join us at 5 o'clock. We'll take a look at the Canucks, who are a team that is attracting a lot of attention, a potential playoff team this year. And we'll talk to Corey about that. Barry Zito joins us at 5:30. He's the author of a book, Curveball, How I Discovered True Fulfillment After Chasing Fortune and Fame. Dan Shulman, MLB play-by-play voice on Sportsnet, joins us tonight. Dan, you'll have the call of the AL wildcard game. First pitch will be at 7:30 p.m. on Sportsnet 590. It'll also be on Sportsnet 1 as the Tampa Bay Rays and the Oakland Athletics vie to see who goes on to get absolutely thumped by the Houston Astros.
I'm with you on that.
The Washington Nationals beat the Milwaukee Brewers 4-3 last night. In the NL wildcard game. And I don't know how to feel about it. The Nationals are, of course, the old Expos. So part of me kind of likes the franchise tie, although I think the only guy in uniform Dave Martinez is in uniform, the manager. He played for the Expos. And Bobby Henley, their base coach, played for the Expos as well. There's two guys in uniform who actually played for the Expos, actually set foot in Montreal Olympic Stadium. But on the other hand, I know there are a lot of people who hope that franchise, a lot of Expos fans, I hope that franchise never, ever, 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 ever wins anything. And I don't quite know how I feel about it. But luckily, they're playing the Dodgers, and we won't have them to think about much longer.
I actually find, again, as a total sort of outsider here, I find both the Nationals without Bryce Harper and the Brewers very rootable. I mean, I think they have a lot of guys who I find are sort of high quality, high character players. The Brewers, I thought, did an amazing job after the Yelich injury to stick around. And then last night, Jeff, you know, the home team is down 3-1. The game really looks over. And then, you know, they score three runs on, you know, a sort of a fluke play. And the joy and passion from the Nationals fans was very exciting, at least for me, to see. I think, I think they're going to get run in the next round. Yeah. But it was kind of, if nothing else, I think I saw this from Jason Stark. A Washington baseball team had not advanced, like, in a postseason round in like 95 years or something like that.
Cy Young was the last Washington pitcher, I believe. Walter Young was the last Washington pitcher, I believe, to win a decisive game in a playoff series in
Walter
Washington.
Johnson or Young?
Or Walter Johnson.
Jesus. Wow. So we're talking forever ago.
Yep. It was either Walter Johnson or Cy Young, one of those. It doesn't matter. Neither of them will
both
be
are with, dead. So we
neither of them
care.
Will be with the Blue can't Jays. Neither of them will be with the Blue Jays at any point.
You can't say that for sure.
Soon. Yeah, I actually can. What are you looking forward to most about the game tonight, the Leafs and the Senators?
You know,
other than the I think we all agree that the captain's thing is probably more important to people. Well, as I said the other day, we in the media keep saying we really shouldn't be making a big deal about this, but we're going to make a big deal about it. And every hockey player you talk to says, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
So I guess it's a big deal.
I mean, this is where I see to like the Brian Burks and people in that world. It doesn't strike me in 2019 as such a important thing, but they say it's a very important thing for team culture, et cetera. So, you know, I see to them. You know, the one thing, Jeff, that you don't want to do when it comes to the first game of the regular season in any sport is to overreact, and you don't want to make pronouncements or judgments based on a singular game. But with so much anticipation and excitement surrounding this team, and I think realistically so, a lot of people who think this could be a phenomenal year, you know, a really special year, I would like to see them get out in a convincing fashion and win.
Yeah,
I think if they lose 5-1, like, the sky's falling? No. But if they can come out, Jeff, tonight and, like, roll these guys, and they should, I think if you're a Leafs fan, you're going to be like, all right, like, you know, now let's get going. We got something good going this year.
Well, it's you know, the schedule does them no favors early. Yep. Although, again, I always throw the caveat out there. If you're a West Coast-based NHL team, you're certainly not going to cry about the Leafs schedule. But the games come quickly, and they are tough games. And what I think is of the utmost importance is that the Leafs win a lot of these games early, because I think that allows them to begin the load management for Freddie Anderson. I think it's easier to do that. It becomes a little harder if you get off to a slow start and there's a clear delineation and difference in talent between your backup goaltender and your number one guy. You'd like to remove as much drama from that particular situation as soon as you possibly can. So I think the Leafs, frankly, the Leafs need to get on a roll right out of the gate, and then you know, I think we need to see them, as Elliot Friedman was talking about the other day. I think Jim Ralph was talking about this. I think we need to see them not simply rest Freddie Anderson on back-to-back, on the second of back-to-back games, but try to come up with a plan so Freddie Anderson gets a good 4 or 5 days off. If that means Michael Hutchinson has to start 2 games in a row, so be it. It's a lot easier to do that if you get control of things right out of the gate, if you get control of the division, take care of the things in your own hand as quickly as possible. That makes it a lot easier to start load management from a position of strength as opposed to a position of weakness. That's one of the reasons the Raptors were able to do so well with Kawhi Leonard, because they were exercising load management from a position of strength almost from the get-go.
Yeah, so two things off what you just said. One, the first month of the schedule, Jeff, there's a lot of home games for the Leafs. So if you want to sort of back up your theory, maybe not the worst time to maybe play a lot of Freddie Anderson, try to get off to a good start. You have Tampa Bay and Boston in that early stretch, so wins against them would be big. And then I looked in March, you have a lot of road games. And maybe, you know, if you have a pretty nice point total, that's where maybe you give Freddie a breather. You sort of really set up the postseason with him being as fresh as possible and play your backup. The other thing I would like to see in terms of getting off to a good start tonight, but really getting off to a good start at the beginning of the year, I would like to see William Nylander get off to a big start. I feel like I expect Austin Matthews to have a great year. I expect Mitch Marner to have a great year. John Tavares is incredibly consistent. I don't think it'll be any surprise for him to have a big year. But if Nylander could get off early, I think that really changes things for this team.
The Ottawa Senators, on the other hand, come in, a team going through a transition period with a new coach, formerly an assistant coach with the Toronto Maple Leafs. You know, the Senators, I mean, gosh, we've talked about are a mess off the ice. They are a franchise that seems doomed to be almost perpetually, unless they change ownership, treading water on several levels. That aside, there are some good young players in this team. Thomas Chabot is a terrific young player. I would fully expect to see the Senators come out in this game and be absolutely flying against the Leafs.
And they have a lot of guys who obviously, you know, Zaitsev, et cetera. There's guys who played here, and you know, including a former coach here who's very tight with Babcock, probably knows the system pretty good. I'm with you. You know, the one thing they Ottawa has is they got a lot of young, fast skaters. And I'm with you. I think they're going to come out pretty strong tonight. Again, though, in terms of the sort of the talent discrepancy, the Leafs should win this game. And I would say should win it pretty handily. But we'll see.
I think the biggest thing that we need to see from the Leafs, and you know, we were talking about sort of rolling these guys and getting on a very positive footing. I think we also need to see. We also need, I think, early to see special teams.
Yeah.
Especially the penalty kill. The penalty kill, and I'll tell you why I say that. I mean, I remember last year when John Tavares showed up. I mean, the power play opportunities for the Toronto Maple Leafs were treated like the Harlem Globetrotters. you know, I mean, you almost wanted to. The Leafs would go on the power play, and people would be going nuts.
And they got off to that great start.
Got off that great start. You really wanted to just play some music to introduce the power play, Sweet Georgia Brown, because I think everybody kind of thought that you know this was going to be the way it was all the time. But I do want to see this team crush teams on the power play, because to me there are no excuses now. You've got a balanced defense core. You've got left-handed, right-handed shots at the point.
Right.
You've got enough forwards, more than enough forwards, to have two elite power plays. You have, you know, guys like John Tavares and Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and William Nylander. This team should absolutely be crushing teams on the power play. And if there's a part of the game, and I'm not going to make a big deal out of it if the Leafs go 0-for-2 in the power play or something like that, but if there's a specific part of the game I'm going to be watching tonight, is I want to see how they control the puck on the power play. And I really want to see the Leafs exercise, and this is something a lot of folks talked about last year, shoot the puck from the point more. One of the issues I think you saw on the Leafs power play last year, maybe it's because you have so many talented guys out there, at times they overpassed. I want to see the guys on the blue line shoot the puck. I want to see more of that. I will be looking for that tonight.
Well, I think some of the moves that have been made, I think, are really going to work out well. Switch Matthews and Marner on different sides. So you really have the advantage now of Matthews with his one-timer on the opposite side. I think that's going to make the power play stronger. Tavares moves up in that sort of, in front of the goalie.
The James Van Riemsdyk.
Right, the Van Riemsdyk position. And, you know, he's got great hands. He's a bigger guy than you think. So I think, to me, that strikes me as a better fit. I think that's where he was with the Islanders for a lot, too. And then Tyson Barrie, Jeff, has always had great numbers when it's come to the power play. So, you know, we haven't mentioned Morgan Riley. And then they're, you know, the second power play unit, I think, you know, could be a top 20 unit in the NHL. I mean, that's the kind of skill level that the second group has. So I'm with you. I think, one, I think they're going to be good, but two, I'm going to be paying attention to them as well. What happened last year, Jeff, and this would be a great discussion with somebody who's really kind of like a hockey geek, is teams intentionally seem to coach themselves into not taking penalties against the Leafs for that reason, which is, I wonder how you almost do that.
Well,
it's kind of interesting in that, like, do you, like, as a coach, do you sort of, do you try to decrease your aggression? Like, how, but it seemed like it happened last year.
I don't think it's possible to coach a team into taking less penalties.
But it happened, though. Like, the numbers said it, right?
Yeah, but that's all on the Leafs. That's because the Leafs don't go into the dirty areas of the arena,
right,
or the rink where you're going to get penalties called.
Right.
One of the mysteries about the Leafs for me has been how a team with so much talent, so much speed, so much quickness doesn't draw penalties. Like, that is a team. It's the same thing if you watch soccer. The most talented strikers, the most talented players in soccer are always drawing fouls. Why? Because they always have the freaking ball at their foot.
Right.
And it used to drive me nuts to watch the Leafs with the puck. And at the end of the day, you would sit down and look. And it's not the referees. It's not that the referees are putting their whistles in their pocket against the Leafs. It's that these guys don't do enough to draw penalties. And maybe more than any other aspect of this team last year, that was the thing that is most frustrating to me, because every NHL team I've seen that has sort of transformational, dominant offensive players was always, always, always capable of drawing penalties.
Yeah.
This team wasn't. And I think that goes exactly to the fact that this team would not go into the dirtier areas of the arena where you're going to get those calls, where you're going to get the slash, where you're going to get the hook. It just boggles the mind. This team should have more. The Leafs should have way more power play opportunities than any team in this league. It's not even close.
Do you think some of that has to do with if you increase the ice time of your best players like Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, John Tavares, because they are the high skill players, that it would force other teams theoretically to maybe draw more penalties against them because they are the harder players to dispossess the puck?
What I'm saying? They have to go into the corners.
Well,
you're not going to get that call if you're floating around at the top of the circle.
I'll be curious to see how
they've got to go into the corners.
I'll be very curious to see how their third line, if the Kerfoot line, Mikheyev, Moore, if they can draw penalties as well, because you do see that a lot of times in the NHL, those lines draw. But I'm with you. I mean, again, the power play for them is such a weapon, Jeff, that with more opportunities, you figure you're going to get more scores. And again, I think theoretically, they have two potential great power play units.
This was Jason Spezza today when discussing Mike Babcock's decision to keep him out of the lineup. And he essentially said he knows he has to win over Mike Babcock.
Yeah, he's the coach, and he decides the lineup, and I have to get up to speed with what he wants, and I need to get more reps on the PK to earn that comfort level with him. And for me, it's just working every day and being prepared. It's a long season. It's obviously disappointing. You want to play to open the season. There's no doubt about that. The competitor in you wants to be in every night, but you deal the hand that you're, you know, you play the hand that you're dealt. And for me, I'm just going to work and be ready. And when I get in, you make sure you play well.
Earn that comfort level with him, which is a very political, very good choice of words by Jason Spezza.
Yeah, that's, you know, there's a lot of sort of there's a lot of dynamics on a professional sports team, and you know Mike Babcock has really shown more than a lot of other coaches that it's very hard that once he has an opinion of you to change that opinion. The striking thing or the surprising thing is Jason Spezza has not been around so long where you would think Mike Babcock would have forged some kind of
Opinion of
yeah, opinion. But again, the guy's been a pro his whole career, was a great, great player. I still expect to see him out there. And I just wonder if Mike Babcock's not using him as an example of, hey, guys, you know, even if you're a 36-year-old vet in the NHL, I could still ice you if I want, kind of thing. It's a little dangerous game, though, I think.
If only our friend Mike Babcock had given Patrick Marleau the same treatment.
Yeah, exactly.
Who knows? Maybe Jason Spezza will be getting 40 minutes a night in the playoffs, and Austin Matthews will be getting 14. Who knows? Wendell Clark, the great Wendell Clark, the man who in some ways has defined what it means to be captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Wendell Clark will join us. It's primetime on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free. Now back to primetime sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, we are 2.5 hours away from puck drop. A little more than 2.5 hours away from puck drop at Scotiabank Arena tonight. The Leafs starting their 2019-2020 regular season against the Ottawa Senators. Hockey Central will get you set for that with the pregame show at 6:30 p.m. As I mentioned, puck drop just after 7 on Sportsnet Ontario, Sportsnet 360. I mentioned that one of the stories folks will be following tonight is the naming of the Leafs captain. Still don't know how it's going to be done. Don't know the identity of the captain, although my guess is John Tavares is probably the clubhouse leader, as it were, in this particular position. Few people, I think, understand what it means to wear the C on the Maple Leafs jersey than our next guest. He's one of our favorites. He's Wendell Clark, and we're very pleased to have Wendell join us on Primetime Sports. Wendell, thanks so much for taking time out to speak to us today. As always, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Great to be here, and good start to the season.
Yeah, it should be. I wanted to ask you, as you got older and had more of these opening nights, did things change? Did it become more like a regular game day, or is there always something about opening night that sort of, you know, getting used to or getting reacquainted, I guess, with sort of some patterns, getting reacquainted with sort of life, I guess, life as a hockey player for the rest of the regular season?
Yeah, there's probably it's a regular season, not a playoff quite atmosphere as far as how you're getting ready. But I think there is a little more emotion, game one kicking off versus what the routine is once game 40 comes around. But it's you have some good energy, good jump. You're happy to be back and getting into the full real routine. And so it's always fun. That home opener is always fun.
Wendell, first, congrats on getting into the Sasky Sports Hall of Fame. I saw.
Class, well, thank you.
Class of 2019. Why in 2019, Wendell, is a captain still important in the NHL?
I don't know if I think a captain or leadership of any team is always important, and it's not always because there's a letter on the sweater or anything like that. But it's the leadership of your dressing room, and it's something I think over history, especially in hockey, you've always seen it. So it's something that we always kind of look for, but it really is, you know, it's a two-prong thing. It's one, how you're dealing with it outside the dressing room, and then there's also the captain, which means the most is what happens inside the dressing room.
Did you notice, Wendell, that guys treated you differently or spoke to you differently or looked at you differently with the C in the jersey?
No, not really. I don't think so. I think the key to wearing a C or having it is everything should stay as close to normal as possible. I think that you're the same kind of leader or same kind of person, whether you have the letter on your jersey or not. You can't change as a person just because there's letters on your jersey. And I think that's part of picking the right person, and that You already like the leadership and how he handles everything in the dressing room and how he handles everything outside the room.
Wendell, how important is it for the person who ultimately gets the C to also be one of your best players or highest skilled players?
I don't think that matters at all. Truthfully, if you look at a 67 Cup team with our captain and George, you know, at the end of his career and probably in that lineup, maybe the sixth, seventh, eighth best player, maybe on that team. I'm guessing I wasn't here mm-hmm. to watch it, but you're looking at those great names, and it's the leadership and the command that he would have had in the room. Didn't matter his skill level. It really doesn't matter the skill level. I don't think we're not. In Toronto, we're not here to market the team. It's already got a good market for itself. So in the States, marketing is something that they like to do with the players, with the C on your jersey, and we're marketing our team. That's a given when you're selling something. But here in Toronto, we don't have to market the team. The team is its own entity, and really you want a good, solid leadership starting with your captain, and then he needs a great leadership group around him. And then if the team wins, he becomes a great captain. If the team loses, then everybody thinks he's not a great captain. And it really has nothing to do with the guy wearing the C. It's up to do with wins and losses.
Do you know who the new captain of the Leafs is? And if I gave you 50 bucks, would you tell me on air?
I do not know. I was actually phoning. Do I have to do anything tonight, Jim? I know I'm coming into work, but is there anything special I'm doing? And they're still not telling me. So I'm with you guys. I don't know what's happening yet either till I walk into the rink.
Well, it's like the Olympic torch where, you know, they don't tell
it
you
is,
who's
yes.
going to light the torch until the last second. You know, in terms of season openers, Wendell, you don't want to sort of overvalue one game, but given the expectations for this team, given how good the roster sort of looks, at least in theory, it's a pretty important game, right? Tonight to get off to a good start.
You know what? And your first game of the year, I think everything's always important because there's always spin put on everything. Even though you say it doesn't, there's spin put on everything—a win or a loss or get in the right frame of mind—and all of that matters in sports. You know, your confidence. The players start okay. Now you get some good confidence going, and that's the big thing about sports—not just hockey, but there's the whole mojo thing that really helps. And if you can get off to the good start, then I think it works out well. Our season in 93-94, we had the 10-0 start. Then after the 10-0 start, we were a 500 hockey team after that. Mm. But at the end of the year, you thought, oh, geez, you're great. But really, it was just because we had that great first 10 games.
Wendell, what are you most interested in seeing this year out of this team? Is there a particular player, maybe a particular aspect of the team's game that you are especially intrigued by?
No, I think we've proven that we're, you know, over the last 3 years, we're that 95 to 105 point hockey team, and I think that's what we're going to be again. I think our key is to make the playoffs. And then I want to see the maturity level, I think, as the players and as a team. It's up to them to learn how to win that first round or second round or win in the playoffs. We've been a very good team in the winter, and we have to learn how to play in April, May, and June. And I'm hoping that maturity takes over with, you know, it doesn't matter the style you're playing, but you got to take that style and win in the most important time of the year, and that's April. So really looking for a positive start, everybody to get off to a great start for the players so they can get their mojo going. But really it's to get stronger and be playing their best hockey in April.
Wendell, I realize that times and eras are different, but at what year did you feel comfortable in the league? There's a lot of young players on this team. For you, was it year two, year three, year four? When did you feel like, you know, now I sort of have a sense of what this league is like?
No, I would say year two, year one, year two. I'd say by the end of year one, you're getting an idea because I played more and more as year one went along. So you get that confidence and then had, you know, we had a good year, you know, a year two, not a good year, but we made the playoffs. Then we had two playoff rounds in my second year. So really you have a good feel. That's why a lot of times age of the players on the ice doesn't matter to me whether you're a 35-year-old or a 21-year-old. That doesn't matter. I think it matters a little bit on the leadership part as far as whose leaders are, because there's life skills that us young players, when you're 21 and 20 and 19, you don't have yet. But as far as hockey skill goes, hockey players play so much hockey under pressure situations that they're ready to play. They're more mature than you think on the ice, because of, you know, the World Juniors and all kinds of stuff that players go through already.
Did you have any superstitions on opening night?
No, I usually liked breaking up everybody else's superstitions. So everybody, you know, you watch the players come out of the dressing room. They all have their antics that they, you're first, you're last, you tap this guy twice. I'd like to just jump in the middle in different spots just to really wreck everybody else's. I found the game hard enough. If I got superstitions out of it, I would really make it hard. So I was somebody that was pretty casual at all that and laughed. But a lot of players, they get their I guess I'd like to call them routines more than superstitions down.
Wendell, this is one of my favorite questions to ask former players, especially former players, obviously, who are really good at their sport. What was either the craziest trade rumor that you heard about yourself or the closest that you were traded to that none of us ever realized?
I don't know what the... I was traded a lot, or not traded, in trade talks a lot, I want to say. You know, year three, four, five, three, I was injured most of the year, but year four, five, six, right, coming out of my back injury and then in through, I had a couple knee injuries there. And you had, you know, rumors to going to Montreal a few times, rumors going to Jersey a few times that Montreal, I think people may have heard about, but Jersey not. And then all of a sudden in 94, I get traded when I heard no rumors. So it's when you don't hear any talk that you got to get nervous.
Hey, Wendell, we appreciate you joining us. Always good to talk to you, my friend. Thanks so much. Be well. Enjoy the season.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Wendell.
Take care.
Bye.
Wendell Clark of the Toronto Maple Leafs, who is a gracious guest.
Yeah, the reason... I'm sorry. I was going to say, the reason I asked Wendell that question is I heard recently, Jeff, that Mike Bossy, you know, a guy from Montreal, one of the greats in Islanders, too, said that he sort of just told this to somebody, and we just learned about it like 30 years later, that... The Kings, Bruce McNall, the owner, you know, Bossy had obviously back issues. At the end of his career, or the end, what turned out to be the end of his career, Bruce McNall called him out of the blue and said, I want you to come to Los Angeles to play with Wayne. And he thought about it for a long time. And it's just amazing to think if Bossy and Gretzky, even sort of Bossy at the end of his career, could have played together. So I love, like, hearing like stories like that of how close sometimes, like, you know, one of the greats was moved to like play with another one of the greats.
Wendell, I thought was, I think it's, I thought that as part of this whole thing with the captaincy,
he would have been part of it, right?
I thought there would be some sort of, yeah.
Maybe that tells us something.
Maybe it does. I mean, not that Wendell would have said anyhow. But it was interesting, I think, hearing him also talk about, you know, the importance of the captaincy. Like, it was weird because we've made such a big deal out of it here, but he seemed to almost be saying that in some franchise it's more important because it, you know, you need the skilled player, you need the face of the franchise to wear the C,
right?
Which is you know, for marketing reasons, which I found kind of interesting to hear him say that. But
yeah.
I mean, again, it's one of those things. We keep saying it's not a story. And all the guys that play hockey say, well, it may not. I think what's happened here, it may not be a story, but it is a big deal. It's just that until it's announced, what can you say?
What seems very clear is just it's a big deal inside the room.
Yep.
What it means outside the room, I guess, is for all our interpretation.
Game two of our doubleheader tonight on Sportsnet. We'll see the Canucks play the Oilers at 10 o'clock. Corey Hirsch is our Canucks and NHL analyst on Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver. Corey Hirsch will join us. It's primetime on the Sportsnet radio and television network.
Sharp.net is your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks. Looking for statistics and trends from an upcoming game? Oddsharp.net has that too, and it's free.
It's free.
Expert in-depth analysis, stats, numbers, and trends to help you make the sharp game day picks.
Whether you want to get in on the football action,
tonight's baseball game, or anything in between, head over to Oddsharp.net and start playing like a sharp today. This is not a gambling site.
Their opinions can quickly become your facts. Jeff Blair, Richard Deitch. This is Primetime Sports on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Today is gonna be the day that they're gonna throw it back to you. By now, you should have somehow realized what you gotta do.
Well, it's not just in Toronto that the NHL season is starting tonight. And in point of fact, it's not just Toronto where a team will, in some manner or in some way, reveal the identity of their new captain. The Vancouver Canucks, who haven't been or haven't had a captain, I think, since 2017, when it was Henrik Sedin, are expected or have said they will announce their captain during pregame introductions. Now, they've been a little more clear about it than the Leafs are, to be completely accurate. They said they will reveal the identity of the captain in front of their fans. So we could presume that that would be during pregame introductions. The Canucks will take on the Edmonton Oilers tonight at 10 o'clock on Sportsnet Ontario, Sportsnet 360. Actually, the Canucks are in Edmonton, I believe, so I cannot imagine they would do this. I would not imagine they would do it tonight. But they are going to go about unveiling the identity of their captain. And it's an interesting, it's going to be an interesting season in Vancouver. They're a team that almost everyone, Richard, has said will be on the, or is on the cusp of going to the playoffs. Not everyone thinks they're going to go there, but there seems to be a sense that this team will do something more than what it did last year when it was, I believe, 9 points out of a playoff spot. There's a lot of expectations in this team.
Yeah, I mean, if it's not this year, I think it'll be next year. But, you know, Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes and addition of Tyler Myers. I think they're the future. You know, we'll talk to Corey about this, but I think it seems like the future in Vancouver is pretty bright. Do you have a sense, Joe? I mean, it's all guesswork for us, but how many Canadian teams do you think will make the NHL playoffs? Toronto, obviously, is a given. I think Calgary's probably a given.
I think.
And then after that, it's how you feel.
I think Vancouver makes the playoffs. I don't think Edmonton does.
Yeah, I don't think
not at all impressed with Edmonton. I think Vancouver makes the playoffs.
Ottawa obviously does not.
Ottawa doesn't. Calgary does.
Montreal, I think, will make the playoffs, personally.
I think Montreal and Winnipeg's really good, but there are just so many question marks surrounding that defense corps. I've got to think Toronto, Winnipeg. My definites would be Toronto. Honestly, my definites would be Toronto, Winnipeg.
Calgary.
Vancouver would be in the next level. I'm more confident about Vancouver making the playoffs than I am Montreal or anybody else. Winnipeg. Winnipeg, I just don't know. I don't.
Yeah, the defense is just
I don't know. I just don't know how that's going to play out, and I just don't have a feel for it. But there's something about the Canucks that
you like. I think they're a year away, but you know it's just a total guess.
Yeah, there's something about the Canucks that make me think that they might be able to take that step forward.
And there's just, and I feel like there's just something about the Canadiens to me, especially how well they played last year. They just feel like an eighth or seventh seed to me, but yeah. We'll see.
I don't think they have enough talent, to be honest, to make the playoffs.
Got a goalie can steal some
games. Corey Hirsch is our Canucks and NHL analyst on Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver. Corey Hirsch joins us on primetime. So, Corey, we all do our preseason picks and everything. And as I said, most of the commentators, most of the people you talk to say the Canucks are a team that could be on the cusp of the playoffs. I kind of feel like they might take that step forward and go through the playoffs this year, because I like a lot of their offseason acquisitions. I really like Tyler Myers. Michael Furl. I mean, they've made a lot of nice moves.
Yeah, I agree. And first off, Jeff, I want to congratulate you on your new time slot.
Thank you.
Awesome. You're like you and Travis are like the Jeffersons. You're moving on up. But, you know, my kids wouldn't even know who the Jeffersons are.
There are people out there saying, who the hell are the Jeffersons?
Exactly. But as far as the Canucks go, I agree. They have done some really nice things. Like Jim Benning's done a good job of shoring up the defense. You know, I'm listening to you and you think they're going to make the playoffs. I hope they do. I think they'll knock on the door. I don't know if they get in just because somebody's got to get bounced out, right? Mm-hmm. Who are the teams from last year? Who gets bounced out? Well, maybe Winnipeg. They've still got Line A. They've still got Scheifele. They've still got a pretty Wheeler. Still got a pretty good lineup. So in order for the Canucks to come in, or even Arizona or another team, that means, you know, Nashville, Colorado, St. Louis, you know, San Jose, one of those teams that made the playoffs last year have to get bounced out. Mm. Who's that going to be? And to me, it comes down to goaltending. Jacob Markstrom, if he has a good year, they definitely have a chance.
Corey, what are realistic seasons for Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes?
So when you look at really high-end talented players, and we were talking about this the other day, and the sophomore jinx, right? We all know about the sophomore jinx. The sophomore jinx, and I was out of the league. That's a whole nother story. But any player that's an elite talent has really never had it. Like Ovechkin got better. You know, Gretzky got better. Like those guys that are at an elite level, their second year, they don't really fall into that. I think Pettersson's going to have an even better year. I think he's that good. Quinn Hughes is the type of kid that it's going to be, you know, trial by fire. He's going to make a lot of mistakes. He's a risk taker. He's a great player. There's going to be a lot of upside. He's going to wow you with some things. He's going to do some stuff that you're going to go, holy, I can't even believe that just happened. But then he's going to make some plays because he's a risk taker where it's going to end up in your own net. And you're going to go, oh, geez, this is going to be one of those nights. So I think that there's a lot of upside with Quinn Hughes, but there's a lot of learning to go as we go along for him. He's an extremely talented kid. I think he's going to be up for Calder. I'm excited for the Calder race this year, by the way. There's some great talents. But as far as Quinn Hughes goes, he's going to be paired with Tanev. So Tanev's going to make up for a lot of his mistakes. But there's going to be some nights, I think, where we're going to see some high-risk plays that aren't going to work out, and then we're going to see some high-risk plays where you're just going to be wowed off your seat by him.
You know, when Sportsnet did its Hockey Central preview, one of the things Brian Burke mentioned was the acquisition of Tyler Myers and said he thought it was one of the smartest pickups any team has made in the offseason. He really brings another dimension to the Canucks, doesn't he? And I look at that team and they're they seem almost like a prototypical Western Conference team. There's a lot of size and there's some quickness in that team too.
Yeah, they had to get bigger and heavier. They were they got beat up a few nights last year. Pettersson took a bit of a beating at times. So they go and they sign Furland. You know, they get Tyler Myers. Even JT Miller, this guy plays hard. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't realize, I didn't get to see him in Tampa. Jeff, you might have saw more. But he's an intense competitor. Like, holy crap. I couldn't believe how he drags people into the fight. And the way he plays is like, look, you're either in or you're in the way. And if you're in the way, I'm going to run over you. And if you're on my team, you're going to have to be in with me because I'm dragging you into the fight. So with Tyler Myers, I think back there, they were so small last year. Hutton, Stetcher, you know, Biega, like they weren't big enough on the back end. And they got abused at some nights. And those guys did the best they could, but you need a good mix. So Tyler Myers bringing some size in. He can shoot the puck. I think that was a great move by Jim Benning. And it's nice to see, like, I'm excited to watch the Canucks this year. And I can't say I said that, you know, a mm-hmm. few times last year. Yeah.
Corey, the Canucks are in their 50th year of existence. What is the franchise planning this year to celebrate that? And that's, you know, that's a pretty big number in terms of celebration.
the Sedin's jerseys are going to get retired. Pretty sure of that. So I think those numbers will go up in the rafters. So that's going to be pretty cool. And then my favorite is they're going to bring back the skate.
Yes.
The old jersey, the skate. I don't think they're bringing back the V-neck, though. I think those
I love the V-neck jersey. I thought those were so cool.
They should have a night with each. I don't know if they're going to, but they should have a V-neck jersey night. And everybody can wear V-necks to the rink. But
Stan Smeal in a V-neck jersey that was the thing.
Absolutely. And the skate, you know what, Jeff, I played for them for 2 years. I didn't know it was a skate. it looked like a horn. What do they got a horn on the front of their jerseys for? And then it was about 10 years later, I'm like, oh, it's a skate. But, you know, it's a pretty cool jersey. So they've got lots of things with the alumni plan during the year. Babich, Lume, Kirk McLean, they all live there. I'm sure Pavel will be back at some point. I don't know if we'll see Trevor Linden. I'm not sure. I'm not sure that relationship has been repaired.
We mentioned that here in Toronto, you know, at some point in the next 2 hours, we'll know the identity of the Leafs captain. I don't know, maybe he's going to rappel down from the Raptors at the Scotiabank Arena. What are the Canucks planning to do? How are they going to go about introducing their captain? Because they haven't had one since Henrik, have they?
Yeah, no, they haven't. And I think if it's not Horvat, it's a travesty. I mean, this guy is he's the heart and soul of this team. And what he does night in and night out, it sounds like they're going to announce it before the first home game.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be a big to-do for the home opener. I think that's what they're going to do. That's what it sounds like anyways. And I got to think that it's Horvat. This guy plays the hard minutes. He's a good person. I can't say enough good things about him. So I think that's what they're going to do now. Now, as for the Leafs captaincy, what are you guys hearing? It's got to be Tavares, no?
It has to be. It's either Tavares or Riley. I've been banging the drums for Riley, but it sure seems like it's going to be Tavares. Everything you hear from people who would certainly be in a better position to know than I would suggest that it's Tavares.
He's from Toronto. He comes to play every night. He was one of my top players for them in the playoffs last year against the Bruins. I thought he was fantastic. I think it's got to be him. And for the Canucks, it's got to be Horvat. And then is it only Ottawa doesn't have a captain for a Canadian team?
I don't think they do. You're right.
No.
I don't think they have anyone to name.
I was going to say, given what happens whenever Ottawa tries to do anything, it's probably one of those things they'd be advised not to do.
Corey, you're closer to the Western Conference than we are. How do you evaluate that group from top to bottom?
Yeah, so Edmonton's still in trouble. They still got some contracts they're locked into. At the end of the year, it'll free up. So next year, I think they're a team that I think this is an evaluation year for them, and that's tough. Anytime you have the best player, Connor McDavid, that's tough to not make the playoffs. They shouldn't, but that's the position they're in. Calgary, I think, is going to be very good. Goaltending for me is a question mark, huge question mark. Vancouver's going to be much better. They're going to be a bit of a dark horse. San Jose is going to be good. LA and Anaheim, I think they're in a lot of trouble. They are slow and slower. Quickly, you know, going through. Arizona got better. They're faster. I Colorado for me is primed. If they get any goaltending at all, the kid they got on defense there, McKinnon, Rantanen, that team is stacked. And Jared Bednar is a friend of mine, and I think I would predict him for an early Jack Adams. I think he's that good of a coach. So then St. Louis, I guess we'll wait and see.
Yeah, the Avalanche, boy, you know, you look at some of the insiders' picks and everything. They're getting a great deal of love from people just because of the depth of their forwards, but also the depth of their young players. I mean, that they're kind of what a lot of, you know, from a distance, it seems to me, Corey, that Colorado is kind of what a lot of teams are trying to become, right? In a salary cap league.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, McKinnon, that contract is fantastic.
Right.
It's 6.3 for McKinnon. He might be one of the best. He's a top three player in the league for me. And then they got the young guys on defense. They got that are on still on their entry level deals. I think his name's McCarr.
McCarr.
Yeah. He's going to be a stud. Goaltending's their question mark, but who'd have thought that Joe Sakic was going to be able to pull all this off? I would have never guessed this. I mean, I know Joe, and I love him, but he's such a laid back guy. You'd be like, he's just kind of, and he's done an amazing job. The trade he made to Ottawa with it, he's got the Gerard kid back there on defense, and he's just quietly done a really great job for that organization. And not to mention Billington. Billington's kind of his right-hand man. I can't forget him because that guy works tirelessly. He's at every game all the time.
The acquisition of Justin Falk by the St. Louis Blues and sort of the contractual thing we're seeing with Alex Pietrangelo, we're seeing that play out. What do you see when you look at the Blues, Corey, going into? I mean, obviously, they're the defending Stanley Cup champions, but are they even better than they were last year by adding Justin Falk?
You know what? That's a really good question. I think so. On the back end, I'm not sure that the Blues can play that style for 82 games.
Right.
They played they played tough. That down the stretch, the second half when they got goaltending, it kind of a condensed 40 game season for them. And then they went into the playoffs. And can you play that heavy, big type of game without getting injured? And I guess we'll wait and see. St. Louis surprised me again. Jordan Binnington, it's a bit of a question mark. People are saying, is he a flash? Well, I'll take a kid that won a Stanley Cup any day and have him on my team, and I'll see him through this year. But they're a question mark to me, along with Chicago. I don't have a feel for where Chicago is going to be at. Like, do Strom and DeBrincat get better and take over Taze and Kane? Chicago's another team that I'm interested to see how they start. But as far as St. Louis, never count out the defending Stanley Cup champions, especially the way they won. They just steamrolled teams.
Corey, it's always interesting to get the perspective of an outsider on the Maple Leafs, given the signings that they had in the offseason, given obviously the changes that they made, particularly in defense. How do you view them as someone who may not be in market and see them every night?
Yeah, I view the Leafs as a team that you have to lose in order to win sometimes. I think, losing the last couple of years is going to teach them some valuable lessons coming up this year, that it doesn't matter how great of a season you have. Once the playoffs are in, you've got to be ready to go. I like the deals they made. I like Kerfoot. They still have high-end talent. Players like John Tavares, players like Austin Matthews, Marner, I believe that eventually players like that get a chance to win a Stanley Cup. Whether or not they win, I don't know. But players of that high-end caliber, they at some point in their career get an opportunity to win the Stanley Cup. And the Leafs window is now. It's in the next 3 to 4 years. If they don't get it done this year, some heads are going to roll. I think that's obvious. But I really like that team. I think that they are primed. Because they lost, you learned some valuable lessons. I think it's going to put them in a position. They're a Stanley Cup contender for me.
Now, Corey, one of the stories we'll be following in Toronto is the load management of Freddie Anderson. And, part of that story is going to be, well, Michael Hutchinson's a backup, but part of the story is going to be, how do you give Freddie consistent, meaningful days off? And, I think it was Jim Ralph was on the other day and saying, look, it's got to be more than simply he automatically gets the second half of back-to-backs off. There's got to be more to it than that if you're going to be, if you're going to talk about load management. This team has a lot of games quickly. I mean, they come out of the gate and they play almost every other day. How important is it for this team, do you think, to win early so that decision becomes easier? If you decide that you are going to rest Freddie, I don't know, maybe give him 2 days off, maybe effectively give him 4 days off. I mean, it's a lot easier to do that if you're winning, isn't it? And you have the decision in your hands. But how do you stand on load management for goalies? What's too much and what's too little?
Yeah, 55 to 60, I think, is good. Now, did Freddie come in shape? Have you guys heard?
Yeah,
good. So that was the one thing historically with him was that he wasn't in great shape. But the last few years, I've heard he's done a really nice job of getting himself in shape. So there's, that's one problem solved. He's done his part. The second part is okay, well, now what do you do with him? 55, 60 starts is good. But here's another side of it that nobody really looks at. Sometimes you're going to have to put him in positions where he's almost guaranteed to succeed confidence-wise. Mm-hmm. So sometimes everyone's like, you know, do you play them against those? So teams in last or second to last place, do you play your number one against them? Sometimes you have to. Sometimes they'll get confidence out of games like that because it just makes them feel good about themselves. They get a win, you know, they let in a goal, maybe one goal. The team plays well. So sometimes it's those are other sides of it that you don't always start your backup against the worst teams and let Freddie battle it out against the top teams in the league every night, right? You also want to put him in a position where he's successful and where he feels good about himself and his game. You got to really manage the schedule and see where you can give him days off, where you can give him opportunity to get to be confident and to play well. You also sometimes don't want to get them in a position where, like you say, it's a back to back and it's in Tampa and it's a back to back and he's going to get pumped for five because the team's exhausted and it's 3 and 4 nights. Mm-hmm. So you have to manage that too, just because it's the best team. If you're a good team and you're going to make the playoffs, it's about where you give them the starts as well. I think that's just as important. So they've done a pretty good job with them historically. Freddie's bread and butter is going to be in the playoffs. He didn't get it done last year. I didn't think it was his fault, but he didn't get it done. So this is a year that he needs to get it done in the playoffs.
It's interesting. It's sort of an interesting way to look at it in terms of the goal times. Corey, which player do you expect will have a breakout season? I'll give you the whole league. Who to you is going to be somebody we're going to be talking about in March? Like, wow, that we didn't see that coming.
Dylan Strome, Chicago. Mm-hmm. I think that kid got moved from Arizona and found himself a home on a line with DeBrincat. And I think those two, I watched them play a couple times last year. I think they are going to tear it up. And not only because I think so, but I took him on my fantasy team, so he doesn't have a choice. Or I'm going to be hunting him down.
Nice. Yeah, I root for Robin Leonard too. I think he's going to, one, I like him, and two, you think he's going to have a good year with the Blackhawks.
I think so too. That's a wild card team for me in Chicago because they've done some nice things, but they've still got Keith and Seabrook on the back end, and they're not getting any younger. So what are their minutes look like? But Chicago's a wild card for me. Dylan Strome has a breakout year, I think.
Well, as a Blackhawks fan, that makes me very happy. Corey, appreciate you doing this, man. Safe travels.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks, Corey.
Corey Hirsch, our Canucks analyst on 650 in Vancouver. Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver.
I'm looking
again,
forward to
Canucks
tonight.
And the Oilers tonight, 10 o'clock on Sportsnet Ontario and Sportsnet 360. The Canucks will unveil their captain for their home opener, which is they play their first two games on the road. So I think I said earlier they were going to do it tonight. They will, in fact, not do it. But as Corey said, there will be an inquest if it isn't Bo Horvat. And it's interesting hearing Corey sort of go around. The one thing, I'll tell you this, the two Canadian teams that I think are definitely going to miss the playoffs are Ottawa and Edmonton. I just think Edmonton has a lot more work to do. They still got a lot of bad contracts. I didn't get the deal with Calgary.
Change of scenery deal?
Yeah. James Neal's already had a change of scenery. I'm
got rid of a bad contract.
They took on bad contracts. It's basically, you know what? The garbage men. It's like if we live two streets over and we're in separate garbage routes and they miss my pickup Monday and yours is Tuesday, it's like me going over to your place and saying, can I just drop my garbage over here so that it can be thrown out tomorrow?
It's rough on Lucic.
It is. I mean, it was like, it's like, let's hold our noses.
Two underachievers for,
let's hold our noses and make a trade. And, I find the Oilers just completely... First of all, not very interesting. But secondly, just they're still a bit of a tire fire.
Yeah, I'm not as down on them as you are. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but, you're still...
And I think San Jose may be a team, by the way, not to interrupt, sorry, but when Corey talked about a team that slipped, I could see San Jose slipping out of a playoff spot as well. But I always,
really?
I always underestimate San Jose.
Yeah, I feel like they sort of just always make the playoffs. Jeff, listen, you're still working with the best player in the world, and Drysdale's a pretty good second guy with him. But then they have issues. I mean, goaltending's an issue. Who's their best defenseman? Darnell Nurse? I think Kenny Holland is a, I'm not saying anything people don't realize, is an excellent hockey guy, and I think he'll put them on the right track. But they've made so many mistakes in terms of drafting, and obviously the Taylor Hall deal didn't work out. The 2016 guy, the Finnish guy, why am I blanking on his name?
Arby.
But he's not playing. They have made bad mistakes over a 5-year period that it's going to take time to fix.
No, I'm with you. I mean, I think Ken Holland will get it straightened out. Any Oilers fans listening, I do think you got the right guy in charge. I just don't think you can do it right away.
I agree.
I don't think you can do it right away, but I like the coach and I like Ken Holland. There was too much to be done with that team, I think, to simply do it. And this, again, this gets to, when you're in a salary cap league, you can't really have a rapid rebuild, I don't think.
Yeah, unless you get lucky.
It's different in the NBA because you really need, we're talking about five guys for the most part. In the NBA, I think you can do it. But hockey doesn't work that way.
You need a low first round pick who turns out to be a great player. You just have to get lucky in a situation. The one thing with the Oilers, though, Jeff, is, what is Connor McDavid's thought process in terms of, is he willing once again to wait 3 years for them to be good? I think they will be good. The question is, how much is that going to weigh on that guy if they go once again 2 more years without a playoff run?
Yeah, I'll tell you. I mean, game's getting younger, and he's not an old man by any stretch of the imagination. But I'll tell you what, it does go by quickly.
Yeah,
and exactly. The thing with Connor McDavid is, I think he's probably, he understands his value to that franchise. I don't think Connor McDavid is the type of guy who is going to sort of, burn bridges, poison the land,
the
rivers.
He seems like he's bought in, right?
I don't see him being that type of a guy. I don't know him personally, but nothing. I'll tell you what, if he was that type of guy, he probably would have done it already.
Well, he would have talked to his agent to try to engineer a deal out of there, right?
And given the way rumors travel in hockey, if that had happened, somebody would have known about it. So I think the fact that he hasn't so far means they're okay. You want to talk about wasting a natural resource.
It's not the best parallel, and I'm not the first person to say it, but it really does have a lot of Mike Trout to it, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You got the best player in his prime.
You think it'd be easier it's easier to make the playoffs in the NHL.
Should be.
Than it is.
And I have during McDavid's run, but yes.
Than it is. But you are right. It's the idea of the great player, the generational player, the transformational player, kind of getting lost in things because he's just, other than the All-Star game or the Olympics, he's just not there at the signature event.
Yeah, and he's just not. And he plays in a Canadian city. That's off the grid from, at least from sort of American television. And it's tough. I mean, I kind of root for them to figure it out because I always want the best player in the game, whatever game it is, to have a chance to win the title in that sport. And like Trout, it just feels so far away right now.
Barry Zito is a former major league player, Cy Young Award winner. At one point, he was part of a great rotation.
The Mulder, Zito, and who was the other guy?
Was it Isringhausen? No, Tim Hudson.
Tim Mulder, Hudson.
Zito,
that's
and
right.
Tim.
Thank
and
you,
Tim
Travis.
Hudson. A great rotation with the Oakland Athletics. I had a chance to talk to Barry Zito a couple of times just in the course of being a baseball beat writer, post game, pre game. He was always, you always got the impression that there was something really deep happening there. And The thing about Barry Zito I liked is you never got the impression that he was thinking about being deep. It just kind of, like, there are guys, I swear to God, I've covered athletes. I'm not going to say who, but I've covered athletes who work hard at trying to be deep.
Right.
And
I feel like A-Rod was a little like that, right?
Yeah. Like, just a little sort of, yeah, there's really not all that much going on beyond the fact that you can hit the snot out of a fastball, you know. Barry Zito was not like that. He's written a book, Curveball, How I Discovered True Fulfillment After Chasing Fortune and Fame. There's an interesting story behind the publishing of this book. It has a distinctly religious bent to it. And I don't think Barry Zito's necessarily a proselytizer. I don't think he's the type of guy who's going to hammer you over the head with it. But it's a story about his search for peace and happiness, and religion does play a role in it. As a result, he had a hard time getting the book published.
Hmm.
He ended up actually getting published by an arm of Random House Publishing that deals with books about Christianity. So Barry Zito is a fascinating guy. He was a terrific pitcher. And Barry Zito will join Richard Deitch and myself. It's Primetime on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. And we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free. Now back to Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, we're about 90 minutes away from puck drop. The Leafs home opener, the Leafs season opener, actually, against the Ottawa Senators tonight on Sportsnet Ontario 360. And a reminder that Leafs Nation postgame with Gord Stellick will be on immediately following the Rays-A's wildcard game on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Nick Alberga, alongside Gord Stellick, and the aforementioned Gord Stellick will be joining us in studio at 6:30 to get you set for the game. I don't know, maybe the Leafs will have identified their captain by then. But we could go to 6:30, carry it on to 7 o'clock. Dan Schulman will have the call of the A's-Rays wild card game on ESPN. Will join us at 6 o'clock, and we will get you set for that game. First pitch is at 8 o'clock on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, as the one of those two teams will join the Washington Nationals in the playoffs. The Nationals beating the Brewers 4-3 in the National League wildcard game last night. A reminder, by the way, that this is your final week to nominate your rec league hockey team for a chance to play at the Mattamy Athletic Center, of course, formerly Maple Leaf Gardens. It is part of our first annual Champions of Rec League Cup, which is brought to you in part by the Beer Store. And you can submit nominations and find details at sportsnet.ca/590. The game will be called by Joe Bowen and Jim Ralph, our Leafs radio crew. It will be called on the radio, will be live on the radio. It will be piped into the arena, so you'll be able to hear it. And yes, there is the obligatory after party. So again, it's your final week to do it, which would mean Thursday and Friday. You've got two more days to do it. Go to sportsnet.ca/590 for full contest regulations, details, nomination forms, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The book is Curveball, How I Discovered True Fulfillment After Chasing Fortune and Fame. It is written by former Major League pitcher Barry Zito, and we're very pleased to be joined on Primetime Sports by Barry Zito. Barry, thanks so much for joining Richard Deitch and myself. We greatly appreciate this. I was telling Richard off air, I made the point that a couple of times as a baseball beat writer, I had a chance to interview you after games and in the postseason as well. And I think you'll take this with all due respect, I hope. I always thought that there was something deep and spiritual about you. Just, you know, you talk to athletes. As I said, sometimes you get an idea, guys are making stuff up. Sometimes you kind of think, you know, yeah, there's something going on here. Was this book in some ways a is it a book that would, with me having that feeling for you, is this a book that would surprise me to, you know, at all?
You know, maybe not. I mean, I think maybe just being raised, you know, by musicians in a musician household, you know, I think maybe I was probably a little more sensitive, a little more maybe aware, you know, of others around me, than most ball players. So maybe that was what you were tuning into, you know?
Barry, why did you, why was this the right time to, write a book? What was the impetus to sort of, take stock of your life and who you are?
Well, my career in my mind was kind of split in two halves. One was in Oakland when I came up, kind of the first half, and, you know, I had some big success and was kind of on autopilot for a few of those years and Cy Young and all that. And then the second half of my career was with the Giants, and that was, you know, a lot of failures, a lot of adversity. But at the same time, you know, as a result, a lot of growth, a lot of change, a lot of transformation. And I think, you know, I just had a lot to say about what I went through, and I couldn't always be as candid as I would have liked in the media. And I think more than that, just trying to crack the hard shell around, you know, athletes, and, you know, we're not superheroes, we're human beings, and we feel all the same stuff that everyone else feels, regardless of, you know, what our paycheck is. And so, you know, I just try to be as transparent as possible about what's really going on when you're in the spotlight. It can be very difficult.
As I mentioned, there is a spiritual and a religious component to this book. Did you have a hard time getting this book published because of that? Let's face it, there are publishers who will go, if we're going to get really deep into religion, I don't know if I really want that in a sports book. Did you have a hard time getting it published, or were you able to work around that or find somebody, some like-minded people to help you get this project done?
Yeah, I mean, we initially we had a lot of people excited, and then they heard there was a religious component. You know, the religious component, a lot like my life, is only the last, you know, 15 or 20% of the story. It's not a Bible beating type of book, mm-hmm. or something like that. I mean, I came from an Eastern religion. You know, I grew up in Eastern faith, an Eastern type of practice, very similar to Buddhism, Hinduism. And, you know, and I found Christianity later in life. And I would say 90% of the book is, you know, all the craziness I was doing running around trying to, mm-hmm. you know, find peace in my heart, contentment, what I think really is the highest value for human beings, for us. And couldn't find it anywhere, man. I was convinced I was going to find it in sports cars, mansions, women, you know, Cy Youngs, but it was never to be found.
Barry, for most of us, we're never going to get any kind of sense of what it is like to be a sports celebrity. And you had to navigate that, one, as a young person, and two, in California, in some pretty high-profile cities. Now that you can look back on that with a little bit of perspective, and now that you're older, how difficult was that? How difficult was it to have relationships written about, to have your baseball career written about, and to really, you know, sort of be, how do I sort of say this? Your life was kind of monetized by media.
Yeah, it's good. I think it's as difficult as you make it. And I think, you know, if you have a foundation for something that's more important on a daily basis to you than your job, you know, or your marriage or your relationship, you know, then those things will kind of settle into a nice place. They won't completely rule your life. But if you have nothing more important than those things, and I had nothing more important than baseball in my life, then it completely dominated me. You know, it defined my identity. The ups and downs were always, you know, taking my identity for a ride, my self-worth for a ride. And so, you know, that was just something I didn't have growing up. I didn't ever learn, hey, you know, this is a job and it's awesome if you get to the big leagues, but there's these other things that are much more important, and these things are unchanging. I think we all do it to a certain extent, you know, if we all kind of get our value out of things that are really volatile.
Barry, I haven't read the book yet. What was the lowest point for you when you were a professional athlete, toughest moment within this sort of journey that you're discussing?
Yeah, I came over to the Giants, signed this, you know, at the time, the biggest contract ever for a pitcher, and, you know, really tried to validate and justify that contract. Like I said, it was my self-worth on the line every 5 days. So I was really pitching to prove it to everyone, to get approval from the fans, to be loved. And so after 4 bad years, I got left off the roster. It was our first time to the playoffs since I had come over there. And Bruce Bochy told me that, you know, they weren't going to take me into the playoffs. And so I essentially had to stay in the dugout and just watch my team win a World Series, which was just, I mean, it was totally destructive to my ego, which ended up being the most incredible change ever came out of that. But it was so difficult to just watch, you know, my team do the thing that I was actually paid and also dreamed of doing my whole life.
Did you get a sense that the change was happening at that point? Or let me rephrase this. How soon after that point did you get a sense that the change was happening, the change that you talked about?
Well, I think whenever we hit rock bottom, hopefully it's, you know, it shakes us up. Hopefully it completely, you know, makes us question everything about ourselves, about how we see the world, ourselves in it. But if we hit rock bottom, you know, and we're not questioning and we're not really stepping back and reevaluating, you know, we'll just try our same old tricks over and over. And so for me, it was many years of trying my same old tricks. And then ultimately, when my team won that World Series that night in Texas in 2010, I realized that something had to change because, you know, the way that I was living my life, the way I was seeing myself in life, you know, it just all was not working anymore. And so it was pretty evident at that point.
Barry, did the change come from within? Sort of something that you sort of just reached a point as sort of an adult in this world and said, I'm not going to pursue these paths? Or did you have to get counseling, or did you use the church? What was it?
Yeah, well, I'd had a string of spiritual healers and counselors and therapists, you know, for many, many years, including my father for many years. But I fired my, you know, spiritual healer. My father actually had a stroke right at that time when we were in the playoffs. And so I had nothing, which was really beautiful to have, like, nowhere to turn. And so I actually went to a 12-step program back in Los Angeles when I got home, and it was for codependency. And, you know, codependency is basically, you know, if you're not okay, I'm not okay, you know? Mm-hmm. And so the fans and my team, they weren't okay. Everyone thought I was terrible. So I always tried to change their opinions of me and do whatever I could to change them. And, you know, I basically went in there and just started to understand the curriculum. And step two was, you know, willing to admit there's a power greater than me that can restore me my sanity. And it sounds weird, but I never thought there was anything greater than myself, you know, my ego, my willpower, my own ability to inflict change on my life. You know, I always thought that I was the end of it there. So I really needed something higher than me. I'll tell you what.
You know what? And sort of now that you found this, do you wonder what you missed along the way? You know, like when people do find an inner peace and happiness, I'm wondering, is there a tendency to look back and go, I wonder what I didn't detect or I didn't pick up along the way?
Well, yeah, you know, I think, and it's funny because when I wrote this book, I was writing this book to, like, my former self. You know, I wish I would have read something like this, and just a warning even. You know, I would have done a lot of the dumb things that I still did in my 20s and, you know, chasing everything under the sun to try to find that peace and contentment. But I feel like I would have remembered some things, like what I say in the book. You know, I just didn't ever have growing up, you know, a sense of what this was, this peace. And so, you know, I would be lying if I said there wasn't a part of me that was angry that I didn't have this earlier in my life. I felt like my baseball career would have been what me and everyone else hoped if I actually had perspective, you know. But for me, baseball was the end-all, be-all, and I just you know, I had a death grip on it. And some of the best players, you know, are the guys that kind of don't care a little. They just go out and do their best, and they can walk away, you know, if they win or lose. They don't need the game so bad, and there's a beauty to that.
It's interesting. Barry, we got just a little bit of time left. You're now in Nashville now and pursuing a music career. Is that right? You want to tell us about it?
Yeah, my family are musicians. My father was actually a conductor for Nat King Cole, and my mom was a singer for Nat. And so I have this kind of musical upbringing, and I'm able to tap into it fully. And I've been writing songs in Nashville, learning music production, and had a little CD, released an album a couple years ago. And it's been so fun going full time into music. I'll tell you, I've been waiting many years for this.
Barry, we're going to let you run. It was great of you to join us. Thanks so much.
Best of luck with the book.
Best of luck, man.
Thanks, fellas. I appreciate it.
You got it.
Barry Zito, a former major league pitcher. The book is Curveball, How I Discovered True Fulfillment After Chasing Fortune and Fame.
Yeah, and first of all, now hearing him, I got a sense of what you were saying. It's like that's not an act. That's sort of
I think I probably pooched the question to him a little bit. But there's something weird about interviewing a guy about baseball and sort of wanting to talk to him about something else. And I think Chris Jones, a terrific writer, who's with the National Post and then at Esquire. I wish I had the story in front of me. I think he did a story for Esquire and Barry Zito. And it was a terrific read. It was a long, long time ago. But there was something about him. Like you talked to him after game, and you know, how'd you pitch, how'd you throw, what, you know, was your fastball, yada yada, what happened in the second inning and everything. And the answer, you kind of kept thinking, yeah, this would be a good guy to talk about some other stuff.
Well, you just got a sense from that interview that like the mind is working, and he's sort of answering questions a little bit beyond the surface that so many of us answer questions. So I understand where you're coming from. And my sense is now that this is a 41, 42-year-old guy, you know, think of it if you were interviewing when he was 26 or 27. Yeah. He couldn't have been in this position yet. You know what I mean?
And it's funny because you don't, a guy like Barry Zito now, I don't know if he makes a major league roster because he didn't throw 100.
Right.
He
was a lefty, though, so that would help.
His curve was just, it wasn't Doc Gooden's, but it was pretty close.
Maybe he'd be like the Andrew Miller of his today.
He was better. He was a workhorse. He would have been better than Andrew, but he just didn't throw. He didn't throw that hard.
I remember that Giants contract, though. I remember so much attention.
Oh God, yeah. Oh, it was $126 million.
Yep, I remember that.
And I think that there's Ann Killian, who's a terrific, terrific columnist in San Jose. Frankly, not enough people know about. Wrote a column on Barry Zito. He came back to the Giants. I believe it was a Giants reunion or it was an A's reunion this year. And she sat down with him, and it was fascinating. In the interview, he talks about openly cheering against the Giants. You know, he's sitting in the dugout, and he doesn't want them to win.
Wow.
Because he doesn't want them to win a World Series without him. But if you read that interview, he talks about how, I think it was Bruce Bochy, his manager, when he signed the contract, said to him, you know, you might as well have 126 tattooed in your forehead. Because that's all anybody is going to think of.
Well, not only the contract and not only obviously the success with Oakland, but, you know, I remember, Zito was kind of a TMZ type before.
Oh, yeah.
He dated Alyssa Milano. He probably dated other actresses. I mean,
He was a good-looking, cool guy.
Right. There's so much attention.
Making a ton of money.
Yeah, so much attention on that guy, particularly in the Bay Area. And so, it's good. It's good to hear a guy sort of now in full, looking back on that person who he was.
Again, the book is Curveball, How I Discovered True Fulfillment After Chasing Fortune and Fame. We'll keep it on a baseball vein. Dan Shulman, or in a baseball vein, Dan Shulman, our play-by-play voice on Sportsnet and ESPN Radio. He will have the call of the AL wildcard game tonight. He'll join us from Oakland. It's Primetime with Jeff Blair and Richard Deitch on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. This is Primetime Sports on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Our radio audience is being treated to story Morning Glory, the album. Released it.
I think it was awesome. Did Tom Petty pass away today? Is that what I'm seeing too? The hell, you know who I follow? I follow Nils Lofgren.
Really?
Don't know why.
A good random follow.
I mean, that is, so they tweeted out a little thing about Tom. We miss it. I just.
When did he pass away? Last year or 2 years ago?
Recently. October 2nd, 2017. So there you go. See, that's what happens when you follow Nils Lofgren.
Yeah.
Anyhow. We will, Well, we can always play Tom Petty tomorrow because it'll be the day after Tom Petty passed away. You can play Tom Petty anytime, really.
Kind of an incredible, if you ever sort of Google his, his discography or albums, I mean, amazing amount of content.
That, by the way, is, you talk about Netflix documentaries and that. The documentary on Tom Petty, which is about 5.5 hours.
I gotta check that out.
It is really, but it's long.
I haven't seen enough. You know what actually I heard is great? I don't know if it's in Canada, and I think it might be, is the Ken Burns Country Music Doc. Have you heard
this? It was on PBS.
Okay.
Yeah, I love Ken Burns. Yeah.
You didn't like it?
I just could not listen. I can't really listen to country music. You could put a bunch of cats in a sack, tie them together, and have them fight, and I would rather listen
I
to
love
that.
Johnny Cash, though. Can you deal with Johnny Cash or no?
Yeah, but that's not country music.
What do you call that?
That's like
rock country?
That's roots Americana stuff. That's
not country. I think you just came up with a new genre. All right.
Anyhow. No, there is a genre called that.
Yeah, I don't love the grand old Opry nonsense, but I like Johnny Cash. Anyhow. I could live with Dolly Parton.
You know who I like better than Johnny Cash?
Is that
Dan Shulman, MLB play-by-play voice on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and ESPN Radio. He's got a call of the American League wildcard game tonight. How you doing, Mr. Shulman?
What a segue that was. I don't think Johnny Cash and I have ever been mentioned in the same sentence, nor will it ever happen again, I'm sure.
Well, I don't know. Give me time. I'll think. You know me, I'm always searching. I'm always searching for a segue. Before we talk about the game you were going to call tonight, which I mean, I'm just fascinated by because – I mean, it's Oakland.
The Rays are your favorite team.
Well, the Rays are my favorite team. And, Dan, something could happen tonight that we've never seen in baseball. These two teams are perfectly capable of creating a new position, something we've never seen before, and it may happen. Like, you just don't know. This is if the end times arrive and a baseball game is going to be played, it's going to be the Rays and A's playing.
It was just in both managers' offices. We get some, because we're doing the game, we get some time with them before the game. And I got so excited just sitting there listening because, like, everything's on the table in a wild card anyways, right, because it's one and done. Mm-hmm. But for these two teams more than any other teams, like, they're – who knows what they'll do, and I mean, at least both teams have a traditional starter, but in terms of matching up and substitutions, it's an American League game that probably is going to feel like a National League game being played by American League teams because of the way that these two teams play. And it's like these two teams are trying to crash the cool kids party. Like, nobody wants to let them
yes,
in.
They,
you know, like the bouncer stops them at the door and says, I'm sorry, only, Yankees are in here and the Astros are in here. And that's it. But you guys can't. Well, somebody's coming in. And good for them. Both of these, one team won 97, one team won 96. They deserve to be here.
Yeah, they really do. I did want to talk a little bit about last night's game. Watching that game, Nationals fans are sitting there and thinking that this is going to be, another sad tale. Then they get that. I don't know if I would call it a break on the hit by pitch, Dan, because, 50-50. But most Nationals fans are sitting there and they're probably thinking, maybe this is going to work out because it actually went our way this time. And then, of course, the kid in right field makes that error. But is this a type of win the Nationals needed? Not just to get into the playoffs, but to get rid of all the ghosts and everything?
I think this gets rid of half the ghost. You know, okay. It still is just one game, not a series. But yeah, to win a game when like 30 seconds into the game, I'm being harassed by Arash Madani as I try to do this. Oof. So if I'm a little off my game, you'll understand. So
yes.
Now he's picking through the garbage in the press box. I really don't know what's happening here.
He's probably looking for Kirk Cousins in the garbage.
They think they're asking if you're looking for Kirk Cousins in the garbage. He just walked away with his head down with a tear coming down his face. But yeah, for Washington, you know, like 30 seconds into the game, it's 2-0 Milwaukee, right? And every Washington fan is saying, oh, geez. And the fact that they came back and won it is kind of miraculous against Hader, who clearly wasn't at his best. But, you know, it was still a hit by pitch and a broken bat single and an error. And they found a way to win the game. But really, Milwaukee kind of lost it more than Washington won it. But whatever the case, Washington's moving on. And if you're the Dodgers, you're going to get, in some order, Corbin and Strasburg and Scherzer. And it's going to be a series. It's a really good team.
Yeah.
All right, Danny, let me just make a sort of a statement or an observation. 2 years ago, if I would have told you Travis d'Arnaud would hit cleanup in a playoff game, what would you have told me?
4 months ago, if you would have told me that, I would have laughed you. I would have laughed you out of the studio. I mean, the guy was released this year by the Mets, released and claimed by the Dodgers. He's with the Dodgers a week. I think he had one at bat.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Rays get two of their catchers go down with injuries. So the Rays buy him. They traded him for $100,000, and he showed up in Tampa Bay and, you know, hit like Mike Piazza the rest of the season. It was crazy.
Right.
He had 16 home runs and 67 RBIs in barely half a season. And here he is hitting cleanup. But that, you know, that goes back to these teams will figure it out. Like, they don't care what it looks like to other people. They don't care, you know, if you make fun of them or if you wouldn't do it their way. They're going to do what they have to do to win. And d'Arnaud was so good for them that he played first base on the days he wasn't catching for Tampa Bay when they had to play their backup catcher and give him a rest behind the plate. They're not in this without d'Arnaud and a guy named Nick Anderson, a 29-year-old rookie pitcher who they got in a deal with the Marlins, who struck out 51% of the batters that he faced after he came over to Tampa Bay. And yeah, you know, again, with Kevin Cash, like, he could use 9 pitchers tonight, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's no – nothing's conventional. And that's even if Charlie Morton's great. He could use 8 or 9 pitchers tonight. But back to your question, Richard, this is what Tampa Bay does. They, you know, they find people that they think are better than the other teams think they are. And they'll find a way to get, you know, to wring every last drop of talent out of these guys.
Danny, do I pronounce it Sean Manea or Manea? How do I pronounce the A's?
Manea.
Okay.
Manea. Like a papaya.
Like a papaya. Okay. What is realistic to expect from Sean Manea, given that I think his innings pitched this year is just slightly under 30?
Right. So he came back from – he had shoulder surgery last September. He was their number one starter last year, had shoulder surgery – started his injury rehab in July in the minors, got lit up a couple of times, but got better and better, came back in September, made 5 starts, and has been sensational. Now, as you say, he hasn't pitched a ton of innings, but he's got a 1.21 ERA in 5 starts. And I think he's capable of 5 or 6 innings, 90, 95 pitches. I think he's gone 5 innings a couple of times already. So if he's good, they'll get everything out of him they can. But a name to keep an eye on, not a household name, but get to know him now. His name is Jesus Luzardo.
Mm-hmm.
He will be a starting pitcher for Oakland next year. He will be a star. Oakland's going to be a problem for a long time, by the way. They got a lot of good young players. And Jesus Luzardo, who's got like 11 innings or something in the majors, he is perfectly capable of coming in and pitching, say, the 6th, 7th, and 8th.
Wow.
And just mowing people down. He is that good. Bob Melvin has complete confidence. He turned 22 2 days ago. He's been in the majors like an hour and a half, and he's going to pitch big, big innings in this game. He is almost a lock to be the bridge guy for them from starter to closer if they're leading. And he could even finish it out. Like, he's that good. They love him, and they think he's a future number one starter.
Danny, this was a team that last year even, certainly 2 years ago, was not very good defensively. I mean, Marcus Semien had a ton of errors. What caused the light bulb to go on with these guys defensively? Was a lot of it Matt Chapman? I mean, what caused this?
Yes. Well, at third and at first with Matt Olson, I think they have the best defensive corners in baseball. And one thing, and you know this, Jeff, you've been here many times, there is like twice as much foul territory in this ballpark as there is in any other ballpark. And Bob Melvin just said it to us. He goes, here's why you have to have a good third baseman and a good first baseman. Like a good first baseman here, if a pickoff throw goes awry in Toronto, it's one base. If it goes awry here, it's two bases. Like you really need a good, and not just a pickoff throw, any throw by an infielder. Matt Chapman last year won the Platinum Glove, is the best all-around field, best fielder in the American League. Matt Olson, the first baseman, might win it this year. Marcus Semien is just a case of hard work, just believing in yourself, not getting down, and getting better every single year, taking ground balls, continuing to work, and having Olson over there doesn't hurt him either. So they're plus at three infield positions. Ramon Laureano, their right fielder, who played center mostly last year and beginning of this year, but he's playing right now because he's got a bit of a bum leg, probably has the best throwing arm of any outfielder in baseball, although after that Mookie Betts throw from last week, I reserve the right to change my mind on that. But it's funny because back in the Moneyball days, it was all on base percentage, right? That's where they can exploit the market. But this is now a good defensive team. They do a lot of things well, but defense is very important to them given the quirks of this ballpark. They feel they can use that to their advantage.
Dan, did you happen to get a chance to see the post-mortem interviews by Mark Shapiro on Ross Atkins?
I definitely saw Ross's, and I think I read quotes of Mark's.
What were your sort of top line thoughts on what they had to say?
Nothing really jumped out at me, to be honest with you. They're going to be more active than they've been the last couple of years, but you don't get the feeling they're in on Anthony Rendon or Garrett Cole. You know, we shouldn't expect that kind of thing, but I think they're definitely going to spend some money. But it feels kind of, in terms of pitching, mid-level, Odorizzi, Porcello, that kind of thing. Open to trade, which I think they should be. If they have, some great depth at a certain position in the minor league system, say it like at catcher, and they need a first baseman or a center fielder or a pitcher or whatever, use it. So I think they both feel it's time to turn competing into winning a little bit more. But I still feel, as I've always felt, this winter is not the let's jump into the deep end with both feet. Kind of, it just doesn't. It feels they're going to continue to move in that direction. And I think they are going to sign and trade for some people that'll make this a better team next year. But, going from 67 wins to 95 wins, that's an enormous jump in 1 year. And I'm not sure that's in the cards.
Now, what I found especially interesting out of the whole thing is just how bullish they are on Bo Bichette at shortstop. I mean, effectively removing the possibility of him being moved position, which something we talked about in spring training, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty bullish on him at short.
Oh, I am too.
And I think, I think he's got the tools, and more than that, I think he's got the will. And in so many walks of life, not to get all preachy here or anything, but talent is great. But at the end of the day, it's perseverance and will and work ethic, and that's what makes a success out of a person. You talk to him, Jeff. Bo Bichette is driven to be the absolute best player he can be, and then to be a little bit better than that. That's what he wakes up every morning thinking about. And I agree with starting next year with Biggio at second, Bichette at short, and Vladdy at third. It's a big year for Vladdy. And I think Vladdy will. I think we'll know one way or another pretty quickly whether he's going to stay at third base. But I agree with starting him at third base, and I definitely agree with starting Bo at short. Listen, if a wonderful shortstop fell into their laps who's a better player than him, you move him to second. But right now, he's the best shortstop they have. I would leave him right there.
Danny, Trent Thornton, over his final nine outings, 3.15 ERA. What is Trent Thornton, in your opinion?
Well, I think he's a guy who should be writing a check to the charity of Clay Buchholz's choice, considering Clay changed the grip on two of his pitches. He should be babysitting his kids. He should be doing whatever Clay wants him to do right now. But I think he's got a chance to be a quality major league starter. I still think sometimes he has to work really, really hard to get there. And I know he had some great performances, but still you still have to be a little wary of, does the pitch count get up? Do the walks get up? He's got to work hard sometimes for those six innings, but he took major, major strides at the end of the year. And to be honest with you, Richard, I don't worry so much about, well, he can be a two or he can be a three. Like, teams set a rotation in spring training, and 3 weeks later, the five is the three and the three is the one and the one is the two. Cause guys, the pitchers ultimately determine the order of the whole thing. So most important to me is I think he can be in the rotation. And as we know, there's availability. There are jobs up for grabs in the rotation. And I think what he did the last month of the season, you know, hopefully gives them one less thing to worry about. You know, when I start thinking about five guys who could be in the rotation next year, I got him in there. Whether it's three, four, or five, I think that plays itself out over the offseason and into the beginning of next year.
Dan, you're going on to do Twins and Yankees, correct?
Correct.
Yes. What are you – I'm not going to ask you what you're expecting in that series, but I guess the question is, does Minnesota – it seems odd to say this given their offensive numbers, but do they have enough to beat the Yankees, do you think? Because I still look at the Yankees and I go, I don't know, the weight sort of – it's like having two real big weights in your in each hand – and there's something about the Yankees that still makes me think that they're better than the Twins.
Yeah, I think they are. I mean, they, you know, the Yankees won, what was it, 105 games,
yeah.
I believe, 105 games this year with the most injuries in baseball. And, like, not even close. They had way more injuries than anybody else. And they're not completely healthy now, obviously. They're without Betances, and Herman got suspended and so on. But they are healthier than they've been most of the year. And I think when Aaron Boone rolls his lineup out there Friday night, we're going to look at it and go, whoa.
Yeah.
Like, look who's hitting seventh. Look who's hitting eighth. And we might say, although the name value isn't as good for Minnesota, if you look at the numbers of the guys, like Minnesota had five guys hit 30 homers.
Mm-hmm.
And I know everybody hit homers this year, but nobody had five guys hit 30 homers. You know, they're 1-2 this year and all time in home runs. And the Twins, I think, hit one more than the Yankees. So the Twins are a really good offensive team, but I think the Yankee pitching is better. Like, if Severino is Severino, even if it's just for 80 or 90 pitches, that is huge for the Yankees, because then they can roll out that great bullpen of theirs. And with the off days in a playoff series, you can empty the tank in game two, use the off day, and empty the tank again in game three out of your bullpen. And I think that's what the Yankees are going to do. They don't need seven innings out of Tanaka or Paxton or Severino. They need five really good innings and then turn it over to the bullpen. And I think that's the advantage that the Yankees have.
Danny, if you had to pick a team, let me phrase it this way. What team is best positioned to knock off either Houston or Los Angeles before what I think people believe will be yet another meeting of those teams?
Right. And that's what I think it'll be. I would say I don't see Atlanta or St. Louis, honestly, being able to knock off the Dodgers. If the Dodgers beat Washington, I don't see Atlanta or St. Louis being. I spent 4 days with the Cardinals last week, and they're a good team, but they have holes, and I just don't see them keeping up with the Dodgers. I think Washington's got the best chance of anybody in the National League. But overall, I actually think it's the Oakland A's, and I'm not going to back that up with a lot of hard evidence other than the fact that I think they're good and they believe in themselves and they don't care how small market or weird or whatever you think of them, they're good. And they've got, again, going back to a guy like Lizardo, they've got people that may not be household names yet, but they've got weapons. They've got guys they can bring off the bench. If their starting pitching is okay, I think they've got a chance. You know, they play in the same division as Houston, obviously, as you know, and they won six of the last eight this year from the Astros. And both teams were playing for something when they played those games. The Astros were playing for the best record in baseball, and Oakland was fighting for their playoff lives. But I think Oakland is like they don't even know they're not supposed to be at the cool kids party, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think if – and they could get smoked by Tampa Bay tonight. But if Oakland beats Tampa Bay tonight, I think they're going to give Houston all they can handle in the next round.
Danny, we're going to let you run. Appreciate you doing this, man. Thanks so much. Safe travels.
All right. Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
Thanks,
Take
Dan.
Care. That's a great Dan Shulman, one of our Blue Jays voices on Sportsnet 590.
He's all in on the A's. I like it.
He is all in on the A's. I actually had a good line I was going to use. I was going to say, you know, you would – one thing you know about the Rays, if you invited them to your party, they'd always have an opener, like a bottle opener.
Ooh, that's good. But should have dropped that.
I don't want to waste Shulman's time.
What's Arash doing there? Arash doing some Sportsnet reporting? Like dugout side reporting or whatever. He's our reporter. Why are you looking at me like I have four?
What
heads?
The hell else would he be doing there?
I'm just asking. Maybe you know the schedule. You're one of the made guys at the station.
What,
you know everything.
Do you think he's there for vacation?
No, yeah, I think he's hanging out with Dan.
Hanging out with Dan.
He's hanging out with Dan
Shulman
in the press box.
Come on.
I know he's working.
Come on.
But
two and two, man. Two and two still equals
come on.
Four.
You got to work with me here, Blair. Come on.
Well, what else would he be doing there?
Selling me down the river like Shawshank.
I'm not.
All right. Well, who's the National League reporter that we got? Hazel?
I do believe it is the lovely and talented Hazel May.
Awesome. Those are good assignments. I like, not having to, the responsibility.
Actually, Dylan's right. Hazel's with TBS, but she's also doing some stuff for us, I believe.
TBS? Nice. Yeah. Good for Hazel. I like her. No, I'm just saying, like, without the responsibility of the team that you cover year-round, that's a fun assignment.
Oh, it is, yeah, especially, yeah. Because, covering the Jays at times this year was like the baton
exactly.
death march.
Right.
So this will be fun. I mean, Danny's right. Oakland and Tampa are two pretty fun teams. Like, the clubhouses are pretty cool. The managers are great. I mean, actually, someone asked me this the other day, because we were talking about Andy Green, the Padres manager, who's... I don't think I've ever spoken to him. And I don't have to now because he's been fired. But somebody was talking about the baseball managers. How many jerks are there? How many managers do you go, oh, Jesus.
The new school guys aren't. The old school guys were, right? Like the...
They weren't horrible, but it's just that there's always one or two. And I was thinking, there really isn't a manager right now. Like, I don't know David Bell. Don't know David Bell. But, I mean, everything everybody says, it seems to be okay.
Weren't some of those old school guys, though? I mean, maybe they were good at once they got to know you, but like Lee Ilya, Earl Weaver, they weren't cantankerous types?
They were good with print guys. They were cantankerous, but...
How was Bobby Cox?
Bobby Cox was... I spent time around Bobby Cox during the playoffs, and he was with the Braves, and he was okay. Bobby Cox, if you were like one of the older guys, which I wasn't at that time...
Right.
Was he had his favorites. He had a bunch of guys who were around him for a long time.
All managers.
But he was always very giving of his time, always willing to answer a question. What I really liked is always willing, that if you went up to him one-on-one behind the batting cage or something like that and you asked him a question, he was always willing to answer. But not those other guys.
Dallas Green, how did you ever deal with him?
Did not deal with Dallas Green.
Okay.
But most of those guys...
Whitey Herzog?
Whitey Herzog I loved. Whitey Herzog was actually the first major league manager I interviewed when the Cardinals were in
really?
Montreal.
I'm just trying to think of that, that era.
And I showed up. It was the first game I'd covered, and I joined the Montreal Gazette. I'd never covered a major league game, and I showed up there. And Rick Hummel, who's a longtime baseball reporter with the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, was in there, and I introduced myself to him, and we were just talking, and Whitey was just... couldn't believe that. Like I said, I've seen maybe 10 major league games live in my lifetime. And he said, well, you're covering baseball. And I said, yeah, I really don't know much about this, to be honest, which of course, insert joke here. But he said to me, oh, I got time tomorrow afternoon.
Wow.
He said, dude, why don't you show up early and we'll talk. So I said, fine. So I showed up at like 3 o'clock, talked to me for an hour. Just, this is how I set a lineup.
Love that.
So, yeah, they were, no, most of the, there really wasn't a baseball manager that I don't think I really intensely disliked. Even Buck Showalter, I just disliked because he thought he invented the game, but that was more fun than anything else.
You know what my
nightmare is, though?
Who's that?
Because I heard that John Farrell's back looking for work now. My nightmare is that I roll in here someday and Shapiro and Atkins have hired Buck Showalter as manager and John Farrell as pitching coach.
I don't see that.
At which point, I'll just run out that window. You're
done? The first baseball player I ever interviewed, Dale Murphy. Could not have been a nicer human being.
Yes.
Have you ever interviewed Dale Murphy?
I have interviewed Dale.
Love that guy. And then the first hockey player I interviewed, and I got lucky here too, Pat LaFontaine. Just salty. Could not be a better guy.
Yep. Yeah. Anyhow, so now that we're reminiscing, what?
No, I was going to say, like, you remember when you are a young reporter.
You do. You remember the people who are
when you are not very sure of yourself in a locker room, and if you happen to run into somebody who's, like, really good with you. Like LaFontaine was with me, Steve Duchesne too. You always remember that forever. And you probably, it's just human instinct, Blair. You probably give him the benefit of the doubt when you're writing.
Oh, absolutely you do. Absolutely you do. The Leafs are half an hour away from dropping the puck in the 2019-2020 season.
Can we get an update if there's a captain?
We don't think there's a captain yet. We're led to believe that the captain will be announced tonight.
God, imagine.
It's got to be the on-ice thing. There's got to be some... Kyle Dubasin is sat in a corner of his office.
People will lose it if it's not Tavares and if it's Ryan.
Oh, I'm cheering for chaos here.
It'd be great.
My hope is that Jason Spezza is the captain.
Kasper Kapanen.
My hope is that it's Jason Spezza the captain. Gord Stellick is host of our Leafs Nation pre- and post-game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. He will wait around for the end of the Rays A's tonight. And then he will take your calls on Leafs Nation post-game. But he's also graciously agreed to join us now.
Love it.
Stellick will join us in studio. It's primetime on Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.
Yeah, it's a podcast, but we're still not going to let him swear. Subscribe to Tim and Sid at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Now back to primetime sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to Primetime Sports. It's Jeff Blair, Richard Deitch, joined now by Gord Stellick, host of our Leafs Nation pre- and post-game. Nick Alberg is going to be your winger.
Yes, he is. That's it for the next few games. Nick's, had fun with Nick, so we're looking forward to it.
I do want to ask him about the Golden Muzzy.
Good question. His Twitter handle is the Golden Muzzy. He was on NHL Network Radio for a long time. He's done a lot of things, and he's a... good guy.
I believe he's a pretty decent, was a pretty decent baseball player too. By the way, let's get you updated. Your Leafs are on the ice for the pregame warmup. None of them are wearing letters. So there's no A, there's no C, there's no alternate captain, there's no captain yet. So they will do the WWE thing and they will introduce it. They will unveil it before the game. I would imagine that they would probably save the captain and the alternate captains for the end and then bring them up and we can begin the process of elimination. Gord, at this point, you'd be surprised if it wasn't John Tavares, wouldn't you?
Yeah. And you know, okay, telling old stories, I got to be careful telling too many old stories, but it's funny, a name they don't like to evoke in Leaf history of owner Harold Ballard, but I sat there in a room like this as Roger Nielsen negotiated with him not having to wear a paper bag over his face when Harold had fired him as the coach in a fit during the season. One problem, there was nobody to replace him, so he got rehired, and Ballard wanted him to go behind the bench with a paper bag over his face as they played the Philadelphia Flyers that night and then pop it off. And everyone knew Roger was coming back, but so he negotiated out of the paper bag, and he just waited, and then when the puck dropped, he went behind. So this is almost like, this has kind of got some theater like that.
Well, I mean, and, you know, God love Mike Babcock. He added more to the theatrics today by scratching Jason Spezza.
Yeah.
And, I thought the first person I wanted to hear from was Mike Commodore, former NHL player, and, of course, considered by many to be the conscience of the league. This was Mike Commodore on Twitter.
I don't even know what it is. I'm chuckling, okay? I've not read it.
Spezza is a very well-respected, longtime NHL veteran. He signs with his hometown team, has a good camp. Playing in Leafs' home opener against his former team is a big deal for him. Babcock scratches Spezza. Textbook scumbag move from the biggest fraud in the game. So I guess we'll put him down, Mike Commodore, as un...
Yeah.
What?
He's not in the Babcock camp.
No.
Well, no. I'm not sure I would use those particular choice of words.
Undecided is the word I'm looking for.
But, Gord, I got to be honest, man. It feels a little low rent. I mean, the guy is a quality veteran. You brought him in for a specific role.
Kyle Dubas brought him in for a specific role.
Okay, yeah. That's right. And it feels, and Jeff and I was talking about, it always feels like Mike Babcock has to have that singular person who, whatever his issues are with the team or problems with the team, you know, it sort of feels like it's channeled into one person. Maybe it's not a dislike of the person, but he's trying to use that person to send a larger message. And it feels a little like Jason Spezza is that person at the moment.
Now, Babcock's claim is, we think of Spezza more maybe getting some time on the second power play unit, but Babcock's saying, no, you're going to have to kill penalties here, which really isn't his bailiwick. So this is a bit Babcock's message about, you're going to have to work on killing penalties. Saying that, it's much like Vladdy not playing on the holiday Monday.
Oh, that's it. Yes, it is.
And you know, those outdoor games have signaled Eddie Lack played in Vancouver and Roberto Luongo was gone. When Ilya Burzgalov found he wasn't playing, he started about hunting a bear in the woods with wine and rum and all that. Like, so, you know, if you're a general manager, generally to your coach, and, you know, I don't think they're the closest put it that way. But it's like, don't embarrass me, okay? And you're kind of giving a little bleep you. You're kind of saying, you know, last year you stuck me with a goalie.
Right.
I didn't want the goalie. Didn't work out. This year I like the GOAT. I like these other guys. And game one, and first of all, Babcock loves veterans. Ron Hainsey, Patrick Marleau. So this goes against his credo.
Exactly.
And the other thing is I want to, you know, who's going to match up the best? Well, anytime a guy plays his old team or is motivated his first game at home, that should be a strategic plus to win the game.
Great point.
No, I just, to me, it's just unnecessary.
That's
unnecessary.
Bingo.
And you know, God, Jason Spezza has played, and unless the Leafs are going to do something super secret with their penalty kill, which would be great because it stunk last year, but I'm sure Jason could probably figure out that he has to be here. If he doesn't know it by now, I'm pretty certain he won't know it by the time the Columbus game.
Well, sit him out against Columbus. Like, if you're saying it's a rotation, he'll be in Friday. Exactly. Well, then put him in today. Yeah. Maybe he's captain.
Maybe you know, Jason I thought Spezza. About that. This has been the greatest, like, fog of war thing ever by Mike Babcock. He's already decided to name Jason Spezza captain.
Be an amazing
just
story.
When you least expect it.
But Gord, you know, you do hit on something. It's like, it's such a total, like, sort of power play that like he's making. And I think it's just, it's so unnecessary for game, at least in my opinion, for game one. And, you know, well, hopefully, I'm sure hopefully. Spezza is a veteran. He'll be fine. I expect him to have a good year for his age and his skill set, but it does feel a little absurd.
Well, I was talking to him the preseason game. He was up in the press box, Spezza, four kids, you know, back in Toronto. Kind of
had him
neat.
On the air. Yeah. He seemed like a good dude.
And so if this blows over, fine. But you're right. To the point, is this unnecessary? Like, come on. Like, look at the way he revered Patrick Marleau. Like, it actually ticked people off that, like, why was Patrick Marleau out so much in Game 7 and Austin Matthews, others weren't?
Right.
And then he does the reverse juice and, you know, guys in the dressing room, these aren't kids anymore, okay? They're making big money. The act wears thin for a lot of coaches, and they, if they don't like the way someone's being treated, you know that, Jeff, you know that, Richard, in any sport.
Yeah.
Like, that's the worst, that they like something where a coach, and that's where I look at Jimmy Leyland. I love watching behind the scenes about his ability to always show the appropriate amount of respect to all the players, and that should be an easy knack.
This Leafs schedule is, I mean, the games come fast, they come furious. It's not the easiest schedule out there. It's not West Coast team travel bad, but it's not the easiest schedule out there. How important is it that they got off to a good start so that they can, whatever their plan for load management for Freddie Anderson is, that they can start enacting that? You know, I talked to Richard about this. One of the, and Nick Nurse mentioned this at one of his postseason news conferences, that one of the reasons the Raptors were able to use load management with Kawhi Leonard is because they always had their destiny in their own hands for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
They had a good start. They were playing good basketball. So you're dealing from a position of strength. I can rest the guy here and use him here, and I can rest him here. And if you're the Leafs and you don't get off to a good start, it's going to become hard to sit there, and it's going to be difficult to sit there and try to figure out when to give Freddie his days off, don't you think?
Well,
because I don't think like we had Jim Ralph on, Gordy, and his point was you got to do more than simply give the guy second day of back-to-backs off.
Well, and the other part, to answer like my question a bit, what was done with the Raptors' load management beyond Kawhi? I mean, I'm sure there were, but Kawhi just dwarfed it because it's such a unique situation. So I'm trying to remember, like, I'm sure it impacted other players, but it just seems like Freddie's the lone load. Is Jason Spezza sitting out because of load management? Like, I mean, it's funny, Mike Babcock is using the word load management, but in his mind, he's not buying it. He's kind of saying,
he's buying that?
Well, I think he's saying, I got to give Freddie more rest, but if I got to win games, I want to play him. You know what I mean? He's still not comfortable with a backup goaltender like he was with Curtis McElhinney, then he doesn't believe in wasting a Jonas Enroth or a Garrett Sparks playing those games. But you're right in let's get in a routine that it's not just back to backs, that there's other ones, because hey, Tampa Bay Lightning is the same thing. I'm not saying they're looking at load management. They're looking at 82 games that don't matter. Just be one of the 16 teams at the table in April, and then that will matter. That's the Leafs right now. The first round of their playoff series, if assuming they're in the playoffs, will be like the Raptors' first round. It was a very tepid interest, you know, till it got going and going and going, because the first round was
expected. Did they lose the first or second game to the Magic?
But I mean, there really wasn't the fan interest that way as well. So in the case of Freddie and that, and I don't know, like I heard Austin Matthews in the summer refer to load management. Like, I'm thinking, what? Like, so you, I mean, you're going to go to a game and Austin Matthews or Mitch Marner is out of a game due to load management? You know, I don't know how deep, how wide a swath it cuts.
They just showed a stat on Sportsnet Ontario. Freddie Anderson has averaged 64 games in each of the three seasons. Oof, he's been
wow. that down.
Yeah.
That's an awful lot, isn't it? I mean, most people are think 55.
Plus, he was injured. Like, you know, when you're injured a chunk.
And you're still playing all those games.
Yeah, so, and again, like I said, they're going to be in the playoffs, so 55 or whatever that number would be, and the way it's spread out. And I think load management is as much the mental thing as well, keeping your mental fresh and the whole element that way.
One of the things, Gordy, we didn't really talk about much today is the third line, McKayev, Kerfoot, and Moore. And in reading some of the Leafs beat writers, kind of interesting stuff that there's a feeling that, like, if that clicks, it could be a really interesting line. Like, we don't know what McKayev's going to be. He's a rookie, but he looks like a seasoned player.
Yeah.
Kerfoot has a lot of skill, obviously.
I think Kerfoot's going to be a really good player.
Yeah, and Moore, again, you know, great speed, young. But at the same time, it may not gel. The chemistry might not be there. And then Babcock has some serious decisions. From what you've seen in the preseason, what's your best guess as to what they'll be early?
Well, preseason was too many American Hockey League games against an NHL team. But on the Leafs side, it was real positive. It was real positive. Actually, when they were in Montreal as an AHL team, they beat the Montreal NHL team. The other part, the price is right. Nazem Kadri was too expensive as a third liner. He was well priced as a second liner. So Kerfoot's more in place that way. I'm big on Kerfoot. Like you said, I really liked him in Colorado last year. Moore was the guy, was the biggest, most pleasant. He was like the Andreas Janssen from the previous year, know, and you knew he was going to find a role. McKayev, I really, really like. I remembered Nikita Zaitsev I liked the first year. Like, it's funny, these guys, Fabian Brunstrom wasn't Russian, but he came over to much fanfare, and it didn't pan out. The best case scenario is Artemi Panarin. I'm not saying he's going to be, he's not that kind, that skilled. But I've really liked the way he's played, and he looks like a solid third liner. No question about it. It's a more conventional, appropriate third line, I think, for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Will this team miss any of the players who weren't here from last year?
No.
I was thinking about it. How many times does a team have turnover? The Leafs had a decent amount of turnover.
Yeah.
They're not going to miss any of those guys.
No, and it's
Tyler Ennis? Not really.
And Connor Brown. There's elements of them they're going to miss, and they got them to the next level. Again, Connor Brown got overpriced for a fourth liner in Toronto. So I'm not being glib when I just say that, but I mean, it's more about what they have right now, that they're not missing any of the parts. And there were some classy parts, Ron Hainsey as well, and a lot of them will play tonight because they're with the Ottawa Senators, but no.
Yeah. Do you think Nazem Kadri is missed by this team? Leave aside what came back for him in the trade, but I'm just saying the commodity, what he brings this team, will that be missed?
Well, it's funny because game number 83 matters, and you know, the last 2 years, it's kind of the scorched earth thing. To do it 2 years in a row, like that press conference last year, that dysfunctional press conference that the coach and general manager appeared to be with two different teams, Babcock and Dubas, when they spoke, and it was very clear he doesn't want Garrett Sparks on his team, and he doesn't want Nazem Kadri on his team anymore. So Nazem Kadri, back-to-back 30-goal scorer, and then he gets John Tavares comes, so he gets moved down. What they're going to miss is what he should have brought for the entire seven-game playoffs the last 2 years. And I saw Damian Cox wrote a story about it as well, just saying, you know, Kyle Dubas has doubled down on the whole finesse thing, you know, that you can win and have success in the playoffs. And it is a different game, but the St. Louis Blues had a little bite that people wonder how much the Leafs may have it in the playoffs or not.
Yeah,
and Nazem gave you that.
One thing that's interesting to me is, and maybe I shouldn't be surprised, is just how little discussion there is sort of amongst Leafs fans, Leafs Nation, in Jake Gardner and Nazem Kadri not being back. And maybe that speaks to the acquisitions that Kyle Dubas made, that people are happy about. Tyson Barrie looks like he's going to be a great player. I'm with you guys. I think Kerfoot's really good. You know, it's just interesting that, like, there's been almost no talk about who's not here, and all the focus has been on who came in.
Yeah, and I think Naz, just because of that playoff thing, it was understood, and it was a decent trade. You know, Jake, they would kid me that I'm like his uncle or older brother. I'm really bullish on Jake Gardner, but boy, oh boy, it's like a lot of those real skilled Ds that when they have some faux pas, you know, I kind of said last year, okay, uncle, there were a couple of those plays
right.
and the crowd and whatever. So yeah, it was time. And he never got, you know, actually that dollar amount he settled for Carolina, if that was an initial amount here, he probably still would have been here.
Great
he probably
point.
Would have been signed sometime during last season. I think with Justin Falk being traded from Carolina to St. Louis, if you're in a hockey pool, Jake Gardner is a great pickup for Carolina right now.
I think maybe the thing too that Leafs fans are, I think, look at Rasmus Sandin, they look at Tyson Barrie, they see there's going to be a little more balance to the defense corps, and then you look at the fact that you're going to get Travis Dermott back.
Yeah,
it's pretty hard not to look like. Well, Gordy, I'll ask you, when has this team had a better defense corps?
You know, it's it goes back to, and it was acquired via trade again, that team in '93. Where Floyd Smith first went out and got Bob Rouse and Dave Ellett, and then Cliff Fletcher added Sylvain Lefebvre and Jamie McCowan
right.
to go with Todd Gill. But they were trades, and it lacked a standout like Morgan Riley. Okay, there was no Morgan Riley there, but it was a very steady D, and that was a big reason for their success. And Rasmus Sandin, to me, has been the story of preseason, is that, you know, Toronto and teams, when you are struggling, before the pucks drop, you already say, okay, Jeff Blair is going to be, he's our first round pick. So Jeff Blair is going to have a great game tonight, even though he may not, but afterwards you evaluate because he's your first round pick. Mm-hmm. You got no D and you've got to put him in there. Where Rasmus Sandin, who's a year younger than Lilligren, it just went out and played like a guy, like, wow, way beyond his year. So it's nice to see, because that's where they got to try to develop some guys, because they've developed so many forwards so well.
Yeah. I actually think we'll see how it turns out. But I like the Cody Ceci trade because it was getting a guy. The potential in terms of a risk reward play, I feel like the reward is so much higher than the risk. If he turns out not to fit, you have guys that can come in and take his spot. But you know, he was at one point a high skilled sort of guy, and I feel like the risk is worth it given who he's going to play with. So we'll see how that works out.
Hopefully he's a rich man's Matt Hunwick and Ron Hainsey, right? Guys that very capably came in and plugged. Now, they made less than Cody Ceci did, but someone that very capably came in and plugged a hole. And then as you say, Richard, if not, then that's the easiest of the UFA decisions to make in 2020 on the blue line.
We are 11 minutes away from puck drop, or 11 minutes away from the identity captain. What does Austin Matthews need to do early this season I'm not going to say to remove, because the issue in Arizona, I think, is going to go unless it comes up again, unless there's some sort of legal thing that brings it up again. But there are a lot of people who, if he doesn't get the captaincy, and coupled with this incident, if he gets off to a slow start, they're going to be people wondering about Austin Matthews.
Well, that's part of being a fan. Now, it's like Leaf fans have to be retrained about when you're winning. Gives it. You know, I love not worrying about a contract anymore. I was so exhausted. The Nylander situation. They quickly settled the Matthews situation. The Marner situation. I would hate if we were talking about that today.
Can you imagine that if we were still?
I am glad that's gone. But you know, there's a nebulous stat that came up from NHL today. We all know Austin Matthews scored 4 goals his first game. Ever. He's got 7 in 3 opening games. So he's got 3 in the last 2 years.
He's if I had to pick one guy tonight who's going off, that's the guy, because the history tells you.
Yeah, because
he has had a good camp.
Oh yeah,
he's
but Zach Parise has the most first game goals, 12, but he's played 13 games, right?
That's
Austin Matthews
stat.
Just 3 jumping out there. So I think perspective, which often fans don't have, they have to keep about it's an 82 game season. So yeah, they're always like, last year the guy that got off slow was Andreas Johnsson. Yeah. Like, he really got off slow, and he played so well for the Marlies, and you kind of said, what the hell's going on here? And then, you know, he got it going. So you have to keep perspective and context about 82 games.
That is it for us. We are less than, when is the puck drop actually going to be? They got the Pipers and all
later.
That stuff.
It'll be, you know, they kind of put the Pipers, I wish they gave the Pipers the 48th Highlanders more prominent role like they used to have. But anyway, it'll be a little bit later, like about 7:15-ish.
7:15 puck
whatever
drop.
Works for you.
When I get down there, they'll drop the puck. That's great. Leafs and Senators, the 2019-2020 season starts tonight. Leafs Nation postgame with Gord Stellick and Nick Ellberger immediately following the Rays and A's American League wildcard game. The Leafs are on Sportsnet in just a couple of minutes. Have a great night, everybody.